Blog Talk Radio.
Friday, September the 20th, 2013, and this is The Last Word with Michael Lawson and Thomas Fortenberry. We'll be here shortly. Stuck in traffic. On His Majesty's Secret Service. One of the best James Bond movies ever made. I think George Lansby was about 26 years old when he made that film, starring as James Bond 007. But it was a fabulous, matter of fact, Diana Rigg was in that. My girl, I love her. This was Telly Savalas played the head of Spectre and Blofeld. It was a fabulous movie. I mean, it was a well-scripted movie, and a lot of people just panned it because Sean Connery, I mean, he's the man. He is the man. But it's just like, I thought that no one could do Batman better than Michael Keaton. I mean, he was fabulous as Batman. The other mongrels that came after him. Mongrels that came after him were definitely fakes. But my man, Christian Bale, he, as the Joker said in the first Batman, came out a whole new door. He was fabulous. And now we're in the Ben Affleck era of James Bond. Give me a break. Give me a break. I mean, we've had, just like Superman, Christopher Reeve was great as Superman. That other mongrel that came after him, oh, my God, please. I don't even know his name. I don't even want to hear his name. Now, this guy, this new guy, who I did not want as Superman. I said, this is outrageous. He's not tall enough. He's only like 6'1". Little skinny guy. He's from one of those series that's on one of those English productions, The Borgias, or one of those other things. I can't remember. But you should see, I was watching it on, I don't know if it was YouTube or not, but what this man went through to build himself. He put 25 pounds of muscle on him. He's up to 200 pounds now, I think. They came out a whole new door. Superman, realistic Superman, not with the colorful cartoon get-up on, but this man can be what Christian Bale was to Batman. I do believe it. But that, sorry, I didn't quiet my phone here. That guy, that Ben, and I like Ben Affleck. I like him. He's funny. He plays serious. But he's not Batman. Batman's a killer. I've never seen Ben Affleck in where he could actually be a killer. I understand he's in a movie right now where he's playing bad. I guess that's to get him a reputation. But forget it. We have a great show today. And we're going to have some really nice things. We're going to have Lady Tamika on later. And I just got my deck finished, the full length. It's 24 by 24 now. It is fabulous. Just got to get the rail up and around the sides and the handrail for the steps. And when I close it in the screen, it's going to be great. We're also going to have Matt Newton from who's part of this. I don't know if you heard about it, but you must have heard about it across the country, maybe across the world, where this policeman, I won't say his name, this policeman answered a call. Not just this policeman, two other policemen answered to a call from stress from a lady that was at home alone. I don't know how. It was very late at night. She answered the door, the banging on the door. She thought it was a robber coming in, and she called the 911. First, she thought it was her husband coming in late, but she thought that she saw this guy wasn't her husband, robber. So she calls 911. He had taken his car, this young man, I believe he's 26, 25, something like that, and went into a ditch, crashed the car. Now, I don't believe he was drinking. I don't know. I haven't read today's paper. But he was looking for help. The police come, three patrol cars, because they one-man patrol cars here, three patrol cars. One of the police, they said they fired the taser at him because he was running towards them. I guess he's running towards them because he needs help. They fired the taser, missed. They need to take taser practice. The other one didn't use a taser, but the other policeman shot this man 10 times. 10 times. 10 times. Now, are you kidding me? Oh, yeah, he was a former football player at A&M. Florida A&M. But you got three policemen there. He did not have a weapon. Did not, may I repeat, did not have a weapon. And I'm going to read you what the police chief said, Rodney Moore, who goes to my church. Rodney Moore is a very fair man. And if I could find the whole piece of this here. Well, here it is. Rodney Moore, I'll read later when Matt gets on, said, I went out. I don't know what happened. My sound went out. What I was going to say to Rodney Moore is those who didn't hear me when I was just talking just now, I pulled the mic out of the plug here. I don't know why I did this. See, that's what happened when you're operating alone. Anyway, I was talking about what happened here in North Carolina about the shooting of a policeman. And what happened, this young man was banging on doors. I'm going to repeat this for those who didn't hear me because I did not have my mic plugged in. Oh, shame on me. Thomas will get on me when I get here. But anyway, he ran to a ditch, a young man, 25, 26 years old. He banged on some doors. It's not a well-lit area that night. It's real late at night. The woman at first thought it was her husband coming home, but then she saw him, and she called 911 because she thought it was a robber. All right. Three patrol cars come. One-man patrol cars. They get out of their cars. He runs towards them. They shoot right away. Instead of saying, hello, what's going on? They shoot a taser at him. One policeman does. Misses. Well, he's a former football player. Maybe he was dodging. The next one didn't do nothing. The other one shot him 10 times. No weapon in his hand. No knife. No crowbar trying to fix the car. No cell phone. Shot him 10 times. What did the police do here? Charge him with manslaughter, second degree. Yes, Lord. Let me look it up here. I think this is okay. I'm not going to tell you the people's names because we're in the midst of this right now. But the thing is that it is unbelievable that they had to shoot this guy. Yeah, all right, this guy's a former football player. He was running towards them. Are you telling me that three grown men, policemen, cannot subdue one man? I mean, he was charged with involuntary manslaughter. I mean, you plea bargain that down, and they give you a birthday party. I mean, this is complete nonsense. So this is the dispute that they're in right now. I'm going to read that later when Matt gets there. And Mr. Fortenberry just got here. We're also going to have Michael Evans on. He's going to be calling in. He's out on the left coast. He's the former chair of the Democratic Party here in Mecklenburg County. And he's now the chair of the Fresno County Democratic Party. And as I said before, we're going to have Lady Tamika on. For those who didn't hear me. Yes, a young lady who... I'm going to see if she can be a regular. She has her own show, by the way, on WGBI, but we'll talk about more about that later. And I got to talk about a friend of mine who was helped involved in doing my deck. His name is Ty. He's over at R&D Used Tires and Auto Repair. He also helped my carpenter who finished his deck in it. It looks fabulous. Next week I will not be here next week is 7 days. I'll be down in Hilton Head having a good time. A rest. I was supposed to have 3 weeks rest after my sciatica attack, but I did not. So October 13th to the 20th, 12th to the 12th to the 20th, I will be gone. I will be in the Grand Mayan in Nuevo Vallarta in Mexico. You take a look at the deck. Looks good. Just finished it. I'm talking to Thomas. But anyway, take a look at it. See how everything is hooked up there. Although I did pull the plug out of the a minute ago. But anyway, that's a double size. And we're also trying to get a hold of, and I have to send an email because I didn't send it today. I got too busy. Matter of fact, it was 1 minute too when I sat down here. But I want to speak to our representative here, Senator, not representative, Senator Kay Hagan, and John Connors, and to... represented Fatah. So we're going to have a busy schedule in October. But see, that's right around the election day, so maybe these people would be jumping. I've spoken to them before, but that's that. And Mr. Fortenberry, yes?
Hello, sir. How are you? So I think we're going to be busy from here on out because apparently. We're having a tea party in Washington, and these guys are giving us plenty of material.
A tea party in Washington.
Yeah.
I remember this old joke. I didn't tell this joke. When I was in Catholic school, I had brothers, and Brother Mel, Brother Cronin. Brother Cronin. He played baseball with us. He taught us how to catch and swing. And I knew how to do that then, but we used to play catch the rubber ball. We'd be lined up, about six of us, and he'd throw the ball as hard as he can and put curves on the ball, and when it dropped, had to go to the end of the line. And the last one to drop the ball had to clean up outside the yard during the recess and a lunchroom. Anyway, he told his joke. He said, the Untouchables first came on television. So, you know, the big things about that, you know, the Untouchables and all the gangsters, you know, they were Italian and whatnot. So he says, did you hear the joke that the Pope had a meeting with all the cardinals, and they got around. And they're all upset. And he says, look, he said, I was wrong. He says, so we got to get together here. What are we going to do about this Elliot mess? So this I think, is what some of these cardinals are doing right now about that man on our TV screen.
Hey, man, I am I'm not a Catholic, though I married one. And I have to tell you.
So you're not a lawyer, but you play one on TV.
Yeah, exactly. But I am terribly impressed with Pope Francis.
Is that what? Terribly, terribly.
Terribly impressed.
That's another part of that.
Changed so much.
Listen, he hasn't changed anything yet.
No,
he has made. He's put a spin on it.
Well, that's true. But the thing that I like that he's doing is he's refocusing the church on
what it should have been focused on.
And he's getting away from all this divisiveness and this politics, if you will, that they were doing. And I think it's a good thing. I think it's a great thing. I think it's going to drive up. I think people are going to come back to the church right away.
Yeah, but what do you think Rick Santorum's going to do? He said, you mean all this time? I could have wore a condom.
You know, Santorum,
instead of the rhythm method.
Yeah.
I mean,
by definition, a leakage of the back of the American system. So he could just go away. I don't care.
The headline says Pope says church is obsessed with gays, abortion, and birth control.
So true. this goes back to my request for years. Just with the whole thing with conservatives, I don't get it. They're so obsessed with sex and stuff because I guess they don't get it. But they always want to know what's going on. They're like little voyeurs. What's going on in everybody's bedroom? I want to know. If they would just leave people's private life alone and focus on things like, you know, stopping war and helping the poor.
You mean, are you talking about the tea party?
Yeah.
It says here, 6 months into his papacy, Pope Francis sent shockwaves through the Roman Catholic Church on Thursday with the publication of his remarks that the church has grown obsessed with abortion, gay marriage, and contraception, and that he had chosen not to talk about those issues despite recriminations from critics. His surprising comments came in a lengthy interview in which he criticized the church for putting dogma before love and for polarizing the church and prioritizing moral doctrine over serving the poor and marginalized. He articulated his vision of an inclusive church, a home for all, which is the striking contrast with his predecessor, Pope Benedict XVI, the doctrine defender who envisioned a smaller, purer church.
Yeah.
He said, we have to find a new balance. Otherwise, even the moral edifice of the church is likely to fall like a house of cards, losing the freshness and fragrance of the gospel. And they said, what did he say? Can you see these guys? What's the name? St. Charles White goes and slaps him in the face. Pow, pow. You mean I didn't have to go out and get any?
Now,
please.
I think that somewhere.
You know, he hasn't done anything in the last 25 years.
Catholics are rejoicing and doing handspring because, you know, the freshness of the springtime has returned. But somewhere in the dark catacombs of the lowest depth beneath the Jesuit ninja headquarters, you know there's a meeting going, what are we going to do with this man?
Well, that's what I said. What are we going to do about this? I mean, next. What are we going to do about this St. Francis? Not St. yet, just Francis.
And compassion. You need to kill it off before it spreads. Yes, these guys, I'm sure, are doing that. But you know what? This is the breath of fresh air the church needed because the church had run into a wall, and it was, frankly, dying off because these endless scandals, not just the way that altar boys are used, but the...
I was a choir boy.
My brother's an altar boy. The incessant interjection in politics and that, like he said, obsession with sex, everything about, you know... I never understood the whole contraceptive thing that somehow helping to prevent disease and maintaining health is evil. I just didn't never get that.
Well, is that?
But I did understand kind of the whole thing. Boy, they wished that you wouldn't have sex and carnality in life, and maybe everybody could just be nice and pure until they got married. At least you can get that idea. That's a nice religious thought. But if people are having sex, just be realistic and go with the flow, you know, so to speak. But
go with the flow.
That's don't good. Repeat.
Let me have a drink. I'll have a sip of water for that.
Go but, with the flow.
Mike. Okay. But Pope Francis is the breath of fresh air the church needed. They really did need this. And I'm impressed. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I'm not a Buddhist either, but, you know, every time the Dalai Lama does something that's kind of, it'll turn your head because he'll do something that is so perfectly stated or executed that you go, yes, that makes sense. And this is what Pope Francis is doing, because used to, they would say and do things that would send people running for the hills with their head on fire. Now, he's saying things that seem to be truly echoing the Gospels. They're truly compassionate. They're truly understanding. And they're just, you know, family and community oriented without being...
He said here, he says, but it left conservatives and traditional Catholics and those who have devoted themselves to the struggles against abortion, gay marriage, and artificial contraception on the defensive.
You know what? During the last
Ice Age,
Pope, because it started under one of my favorite people, John Paul II, by the way.
I actually
liked his mind. I thought he was very ultra-conservative, much more than I would like. However, a brilliant guy. He truly was a brilliant man. Spoke many languages, you know. But under, especially the last one, but there was a trend, just like there was a trend in America, going toward ultra-conservatism with all this Tea Party and that kind of ilk.
Mm-hmm.
But that there was a bent that went off track somewhere where they got in the Catholic Church, they started that ultra conservatism and secretism where they were these little groups that would get together and they started literally doing the end times flailing of the back and wearing barbed wire on the inside of the thighs and all that. You remember this whole movement that is extremely disturbing. And I think it was a little bit of conservatism mixed with a lot of that millennialism, because at that time in the 90s and stuff, everybody was getting ready for the end times, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was that kind of mix that spurred that on. And then when, because it was just like, you know, they had it in 1000 AD. They had people running around beating each other, waiting for the end time. They thought that was the end of the world. But, you know, they do that every 100 years. But anyway, so they thought that it'd be the end of the world. And then when it wasn't, you know, lo and behold, the world goes on. I think that cachet is gone. And I think people got tired of beating themselves with, you know, studded whips. And now they can just read 50 Shades of Grey and have the same experience. But I think that was a trend.
It was a trend.
Something. And I think it's over. Just like I think or I hope that the wave has crested in American politics and people, you know, hey, let's try this out. It's the new flavor of the month. And they went into the party, the Tea Party, and then they saw them set fire to the country, burn it down around them, and then go, oh, you know what? This kind of sucks. Let's go back to having a country again. So I think that trend is over, and I think that's what's happening in the Catholic Church.
Well,
it's very refreshing.
The thing is, he has come from a country that has to try to, you know, they're Catholics, but they know that they can't, because they're so poor, they can't do children 24/7. So, I mean, he's lived in a country that is doing that. And you can't tell me that every time they lay into bed, the man says, oh, yeah, let's have another child. I do not believe that.
Right.
They're not thinking about kids. So, St. Francis, I see the church as a field hospital after battle. It is useless to ask a serious injured person if he has high cholesterol and about the level of his blood sugars. You have to heal his wounds. Then we can talk about everything else.
So triage and field hospital.
I mean, the guy is not saying, arms off, cut it off. No, it doesn't need to be cut off. It can be sewn up. We ain't got time. Cut it off. Next.
Yeah. And you know what? It's bleeding, so go ahead and stick a torch to it.
I mean,
cauterize it. Well, no, but I'm liking it, man. I think he's a peaceful guy, and I hope that it stays that way.
Well, I was watching Chris Hayes, and he said that he grew up Catholic. He strayed away from it. He said, you know, I think I'm going to church this weekend.
See?
That's what he said. That's what he said. I think I'm going to church this weekend.
People I know that are saying the same thing. They haven't gone in years. They haven't had any interest. And they suddenly are, every day and every time I talk to them, talking about the church again.
Absolutely.
They're talking about him again. And they're talking about things like, this is what I always thought that Jesus was about. I thought this is what the church used to be about. And that is what I'm talking about. That's the renewal that will happen under this pope.
Well, I think you're right. And right now, we have a caller. Hello, who's this? Hello, caller. Okay, I guess they just want to listen. That's fine. We'll come back to you.
Right.
Anyway, the thing is that we have a chance now.
Now, here's
Yes.
I just want to throw this out there since we're dealing with, you know, Trainwreck USA.
Trainwreck USA.
What if in the depths of the Vatican Bank.
The Vatican
Bank. Deep in that vault where they like to
block
each other.
Yes.
They secretly
form
an alliance to stop him, because you don't want hope. Remember, hope is a
hope would change.
Thing. Hope is a
well,
horrible thing.
That's what they do to Obama.
He does, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. What if they defund the Roman Catholic Church? What if they stop paying the bills and let it default? So that they can shut that pope down.
Speaking of that,
you have never seen in the history of the United States the debt ceiling or the threat of not raising the debt ceiling being used to extort a president or a governing party. And trying to force issues that have nothing to do with the budget and have nothing to do with the flip the script for a second and imagine a situation in which a Democratic speaker said to a Republican president, I'm not going to increase the debt ceiling unless you increase corporate taxes by 20%. And if you don't do it, we'll default on the debt and cause a worldwide financial crisis. Even though that Democratic speaker didn't have the votes to force through that particular piece of legislation, they would simply say, we will blow the whole thing up unless you do what I want. That can't be arrested. What I will not do is to create a habit, a pattern, whereby the full faith and credit of the United States ends up being a bargaining chip to set policy. It's irresponsible. I have responsibilities at this point, not just to the current generation, but to future generations. And we're not going to set up a situation where the full faith and credit of the United States is put on the table every year or every year and a half, and we go through some sort of terrifying financial brinksmanship because of some ideological arguments that people are having about some particular issue of the day. We're not going to do that.
Hallelujah.
Ain't going to be hell ashes. Saw him today.
Yep.
He said, you guys, look between my fingers. What do you see? What's in the middle there?
Yeah. Well, look, this is, I think they need to start, because, you know, you remember the Republicans were not shy at all about calling anyone that dared to even question their policies an outright terrorist.
That's right.
They called the Dixie Chicks terrorists. They called teachers terrorists. They called every environmental group terrorists. They called, you know, eco-terrorists. They came up with all the environmental terrorists. They had names for everybody, right, except for their people, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. However, despite all of that, people who are working hard and they just want slightly better wages, or people who are working hard and they just want the right to be able to maybe not be fired at the whim of, you know, any employer, things like that are pretty American ideals. These are capitalist ideals that just say, hey, you know what? Give me a little bit more and I'll work that much harder. I'm invested in.
Absolutely.
You know, just give me a little fairness. That's all they're asking for. You know, let me have health care for my children. Let me have a take home paycheck. Things like that. Okay. No, that was called terrorism. These people directly hate and assault every day the United States government.
Absolutely.
They claim in their policy, anybody, to want to destroy the federal government. These, they're completely radical, but these right-wing, the far right-wing, not the regular conservatives we're talking about.
Not the regular right-wing, only the far right-wing.
They look at their platform. Yeah. I mean, look at Rand Paul, all these guys. They, from day one, said they were going to eliminate every agency of government. They were going to do away with Department of Education, the IRS, you know, Department of Defense, anything else they wanted. They want to return.
Not caring what happens.
No, their point is they are anti-government
government.
That's
itself. Right. But yet they're all and got they, jobs in government.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
with pensions.
You know, that's because they're.
Stay there 6 years and you're out. I mean, well, not 6 years. It's 3 years. Yeah. Nice.
But the thing is, they don't like the United States of America. They have stated on paper their policy is to return it to states' rights, which was a confederacy, which was 50 countries working together in a loose coalition, not a single government, which is a federal government,
right,
as the United States. That's what's called United States, not divided and hating each other.
You mean like Africa that has, what, 100 countries over there?
Yeah.
Everybody across the border.
You
this 10
is, what,
feet, you
know,
the
this is the same thing
not
so that
right.
they called Balkanism. Over
right.
there, every
right.
5 feet, there's another country.
Right.
Because this group says, well, we're going to be different than our neighbor, and we want to be our own people.
Right.
Okay, that's what they want. It is, I can't understand why people don't start calling it what it is. It's anti-Americanism. It's unpatriotic. It is, in fact, by official definition, is actually treasonous.
Oh, yeah.
Because they actively work to destroy the United States government.
Right.
Now, they have failed to pass fully the laws they want to defund and deregulate and destroy the whole government. So in lieu of that, they are now taking on the tactic in the last couple of years of simply every 6 months shutting the government down.
Right. Well, the thing is now,
paying its bills.
Right. Well, you see, the thing is that right now,
how
that,
is this even
that,
possible?
The thing, position we're in right now is, let me just play. No, I'll worry about that later. Let me let you hear what former Governor Granholm says about Obamacare.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. The study that you're referring to comes from the Kaiser Family Foundation, which is a totally nonpartisan group that is the go-to place for facts. And what they said today in this great report, which evaluated 17 states and the District of Columbia, is that the costs for individuals for Obamacare are going to be significantly less than even the Congressional Budget Office predicted.
And this
Why?
Is the Kaiser Foundation, a nonpartisan group.
Right, right. And the reason why is because there's competition. So the Republicans who claim to be capitalists and pro-competition, that's exactly what this particular plan does, is causes groups to bid against one another. And so, for example, in New York, what this Kaiser Foundation found is that if you're a single person who's 40 years old, your cost for health care, once the tax credits kick in it because of Obamacare, is about $111 per month. It would have been well over $300 per month. It's going to be significantly cheaper for people.
Now, we have a call right now. Let's see who this is. Hello there. And who is this?
Hello. Michael Evans.
Oh, it's Michael Evans from the Left Coast.
That's correct.
Has the Left Coast gone into the ocean yet? I hope not. Let me answer that first because my Dodgers won. And we're going to win the World Series. Then it can go into the ocean. I mean,
when it goes into the water, they're going to move the Dodgers to Fresno.
Yeah, hey, no doubt about it. They move the whole thing. They got enough money. They can move it.
Hey, Michael. Hey, this is Thomas. I just say hi, but I also wanted to ask you a question. I'm talking to my brother out there, and he's been pleased, to say the least, with the change in governorship y'all have had lately. And I was just wondering if it's just the governorship, or perhaps it was directly related to, you know, you moving to California. But I've noticed that y'all went from record-breaking, I mean, literally record-breaking, being the number one state in debt under Republicans, to now suddenly you've magically paid all your bills and you're able to do things again as a functioning government. You want to address that miracle?
Well, you know, that happened under Bill Clinton, too, at the national level. And so I think it's a characteristic of Democrats and a misperception of Republicans that Republicans sort of perpetuate.
Well, it's not a misperception. It's an outright lie that they perpetuate. That's their advertising brand. You know, like, smoke our cigarettes. They don't hurt you. They're wonderful. Yeah, that's what they're
right.
doing. They're all day long. We're fiscally responsible as they train wreck.
They train wreck the country on the path. I should say they haven't train wrecked it yet, but can you name one bill? Let me rephrase that. Can you name one job bill that this Congress has passed to get us going in building, repairing, or just jobs across the country? One job bill. Can you name one, Mr. Evans?
Well, I don't think there's been one. You know, I mean, we desperately needed a second stimulus package. Under political discussion.
Did they say that's a bad word, stimulus? But if you didn't use the word stimulus, okay. They have been in office since January. This is now September. The last mongrels were in there for 2 years. Did they come up with one job. And as I remember, wasn't their whole mantra was, we are going to create jobs?
Yeah, that was correct. It was jobs, jobs, jobs. No plan.
Well, then how do they blame this president because there's no jobs when the president doesn't create jobs? All he does is sign the paperwork, yay or nay. I mean, he has to get it from them. So if they do not sit down, even by themselves, forget the Democrats, even by themselves, sit down as a group of Republicans, and I should say three-quarter Republicans and three-quarter regressive mongrels, if they sat down and offered a job plan amongst themselves, has that ever been done in the last three
years?
Well,
it hasn't, but that would be a politically expedient idea for them, because if they were to come forward with a jobs plan, then it would put pressure on the Senate to, say yay or nay to it. But I just don't think it's part of their agenda. I mean, creating jobs would be helping people, and that's sort of antithetical to what the current, at least the right wing of the Republican Party, wants to achieve.
Well, see, this is what I don't understand, because in looking at the U.S. economy charts from the Department of the Treasury, it shows that from the beginning of January 2008 to the beginning of 2009, well, I should say beginning of 2008, that is still the Republican budget, the job growth downward was unbelievable. And up from between January 2008 and January 2009, 839,000 jobs were lost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it took till January 2010 to start to flip that around. And between January 2010 and January 2012, 3.7 million private sector jobs were created. In January alone of 2012, 257,000 jobs were created. Now, who was in office between 2008 and 2012? Let me see. Do you have any idea, Mr. Evans?
Well, yeah, and it's a direct result of the stimulus package that we were able to turn things around, the package that was passed shortly after Obama came into office. And so you had that helping job growth, but at the same time, you had Republicans trying to cut public sector jobs in state governments throughout the country. So at the same time, you have the president and his administration trying to move the economy forward to get out of the recession. You have the Republican Party not only working against that at the congressional level, but working against it in all of the state houses they control by trying to eliminate public sector jobs.
Well, and you're absolutely right. I just said 839,000 jobs were lost. 598,000 of those were government jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Were government jobs.
Again, here's another myth busting. Those big government liberals. Now, this is a president that is shrinking the entire government. He's shrinking our debt, and he's making money and creating jobs.
What?
This doesn't fit the pattern. I think you're totally wrong. This is not the myth.
Now we also have you and I are our number one guy here who could not believe that during this time, in 2008, when, I don't want to say who was president, but we all know it was Dick Cheney. He says this guy, Rush Limbaugh, says he can't believe it. Just listen to this.
Now, I don't know about the economy shrinking by an annual rate of more than 8%. That, folks, we wouldn't be talking recession if that were happening, if that had been happening. I mean, that, there's no way. Annual rate of more than 8%, that, my gosh, we'd have had soup kitchens, soup lines. There's just no way.
Well, this is the problem. We had soup kitchen and soup lines, just not in his apartment condo complex.
Well, that's because OxyContin is a booming business.
Yeah, OxyContin.
It didn't recede with the economy. So.
Now, I mean, well, what have you seen out there in Fresno, Mr. Evans, as far as a change between, because you got out there when? It was 2007?
Late 2008.
Late 2008, okay. Have you seen a change in the time you're out there as far as an attitude of people that feel a little more confident that things look like they're turning around?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely been an improvement in perception. There's been a lot of positive things happening in California specifically, and in the Central Valley in particular. Of course, there's the high-speed rail, which is going to bring a lot of jobs to the area. People are still concerned about the high unemployment rate, but there's definitely a perception that we've turned the corner.
Well, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Mike. Personal experience. Now, my brother lives out there, Sacramento Valley, and his wife was a school teacher. She was out of work under the last government. She got furloughed, you know, where they quit paying, public education. And then the new government was rehired again and got to go. But she was working as teacher's aides and on the side and tutoring and doing everything she could to try and keep her house while she couldn't work as a school teacher, which she has a master's degree in education for, and yet, you know, the family values people hack and slash and run the economy into the ground and stand around patting each other on the back and putting bumper stickers on their cars. They don't do anything for real people. And now you see real change. You know, there's real investment.
So what did those people do to put the bumper stickers? Weren't they out of work too?
You've got to wonder, why do they keep supporting these policies of stupidity? Because look at the difference when, like in California, they can pay the bills, the government is functional, they can build things like high-speed rails again, they can open the schools and pay the teachers again. I mean, this is real-world results, and it's that simple.
Now, the overall business investment from in January 2009, went down the tubes 140% between 2008-2009. Between 2011, the second quarter of 2011, it was up 29%.
29%!
Investments in equipment and software between 2009 and 2011 is up 30%. Corporate profits between the third quarter of 2008 to the second quarter of 2011 is up 76%.
So even the evil corporations are making money hand over fist.
I mean, what is the problem that you see in your area, your neck of the woods, that needs to be addressed by these corporate raiders in our Congress?
I think first and foremost is campaign finance reform. the fact that these people can control elections by putting any amount of money into them, you know, that's a huge problem. And until we can turn that around, I think we're going to continue to see the kind of disasters we've seen in North Carolina with Art Pope and you know, what we've seen with the Koch brothers throughout the country.
Okay, but I understand that. But how long, with the changing demographics, how long will that money help them do what they want to do?
Well, but again, the money still helps them. I mean, look at North Carolina. You're going to start requiring a voter ID. So
right.
Even though the demographics may favor Democratic or progressive candidates, there are going to be increasing numbers of them that aren't allowed to vote. So those are the kinds of efforts they're going to undertake. Yes, the demographics of the country are already against them, and are going to increasingly be so. So, you know, their strategy now is to eliminate that advantage through these deceitful voter suppression measures.
Okay, but don't you feel that the younger, more articulate, not led by the nose person that's out there is going to have an ID, and they're going to be getting into this process, is going to still, because we outnumber them as it is. So how many of them do they feel is like if they can influence 1 million people, they're safe. But if you have 1 million people or more than 1 million people that are coming into the process, it's not going to help them. Because some of that 1 million people who don't have ID are going to get ID. And then the younger person coming along is going to get ID. So if they can't reach the younger person and can't convince them like this outrageous commercial they got with the woman spreading her legs in the office of the doctor, and who comes in up in the middle is Uncle Sam. I mean, that's the commercial they have right now, where the lady comes into the hospital, and she says, oh, yes, well, it's time for your, wherever it was, Pap smear, I don't know what the heck it was, but the nurse said, okay, come in the room, and she went in the room, and she said, okay, she sit down, and he put her legs in a stirrup. So, the doctor will be right with you.
Yeah.
So, and then up between her legs comes this figure dressed like Uncle Sam. And the woman screams, you know, like, don't Uncle Sam get in between you and your doctor. Uncle Sam's going to be looking up your dress. So, but that can only last so long. And I don't care how much money you have. We saw that here with when Larry Kissel was elected. He was outgunned 100, maybe 100 to 1, 10 to 1. He still won. So the thing is that you can suppress the suppressed only so long.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
Even they.
Well,
getting
I hope that you're right, but I think waiting for that strategy could take decades.
Oh, exactly.
And again, just look at North Carolina. I mean, even though the demographics are on our side, and even let's say if you had 60% turnout, you still got the problem with voter suppression, and you have the problem of the gerrymandered districts.
Yes, you're absolutely correct.
So if you get 60% turnout, your 60% turnout's going to largely be in districts that are already Democratic and aren't going to affect the two houses in the state legislature.
Well, you're absolutely correct. But the problem again is there wasn't a 60% turnout. These people are only in office because nobody showed up at the polls in 2010. Nobody.
And that's the problem we have to address.
That's correct. Now, the thing is that if you have just 10% of the people to turn out, 10%, we didn't have a 10% turnout. If you had a 10% turnout,
They wouldn't have won because only one couple of very few only won by a couple hundred thousand votes,
yeah,
or 100,000 or less in some cases. So it's not a matter that everybody thought, and I think we talked about this before, when, hey, we had the first black president ever. Man, there's going to be a chicken in every pot. All our problems are solved.
Yeah, and then in the midterms, everybody stayed home.
Right.
Clapping each other on the
right,
phone.
Everybody was staying home and having a party.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, we're going to get a job right away. We can spend the money. Let's have a party. Let's go out and buy the car because we are going to be, hey, you know, it's
so here's something I would like to see, Mike. And this is different than what y'all are talking about, but it's in the same line. I don't understand why the Democrats don't get their act together. The Republicans have for years,
been
framing the argument. It's always the way they say the world is. We never do anything but kind of maybe whine and fight back after the fact.
Those were Democrats.
But yeah, I know. But we've got to start framing the argument because they are still. I saw a poll the other day that now they've been eroding confidence on quote unquote Obamacare, which, by the way, everybody now, every news agency, and I even heard the freaking White House itself the other day use the phrase Obamacare.
That's right.
Which is just seeding the argument.
No, but I think it's good to use Obamacare.
No, but it's idiotic. Again, just to always let them have their way and their say, because they claim things that aren't true. They stand for things that they don't stand for.
So they lie.
They lie. So we've got to start taking it to them.
Well,
and turn it around, because it's unpatriotic what they do to the country. It's anti-family. It's anti-jobs. It's anti-everything.
Well, you see,
but we've got
as I said before, you are a purist. This is not a purist world. Listen, nobody thinks like that, and that ain't gonna happen. The problem is basic. Get your butt out and vote. Period. Don't worry about nothing else. Do your job, and things will work.
The people don't go vote because of all the
BS. Well, yeah, but see, I think that only affects them. I do not think that it affects Democrats. I think Democrats are lazy. Period. Lazy. Yeah, go ahead.
I think there's a connection between what Thomas is saying and increasing turnout, because if we're able to point out not only the lies that the Republicans are telling, but how every policy they want to implement is going to a major sector of society, then I think that will motivate people to vote. Because if you talk about everybody they want to hurt, that's going to affect somebody who's voting.
Okay, but
I understand.
The thing is, they are going to be proved lying every time they open their mouth. As I've been saying for the last 2 weeks, I pay for my daughter's health insurance. And in July, I got a letter from them. I said, well, I don't know what they must be wanting to get more money or change the insurance for or whatever. I put it on the computer table. I didn't even look at it. I opened it up here on the show about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And in it says, because of the Affordable Care Act, parentheses, Obamacare, because of Obamacare, we have to refund you the monies we don't use in premiums for you. When people start getting that check in a mail, which in my case was $99.96, they won't believe the Republicans anymore. They won't believe anything they say. And according to the letter I got from the insurance company, over $22,800,000 in change was given back to premium insurers by this company alone. Now, what about the hundreds of companies across this entire United States that are going to be sending checks in the mail back to the premium holders? You don't think that's going to have an effect?
Well, yeah, it is.
Nothing else what the Republicans can say about defunding Obamacare is going to make any sense to them. They will no longer believe nothing that comes out of their mouth. I mean, when someone gives you money, you believe it. And forget that the other person says, don't believe that money. That money's fake. Don't believe it. They're not going to believe it. And this is the reason why they have been pushing this thing and pushing it and pushing it. Because October 1st, everybody who has insurance is going to get a letter in the mail explaining all the additions that they have. And this letter was sitting on my computer desk for 3 weeks. I didn't open it.
Mm-hmm.
3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
With cash in it.
Well,
so what do you think, Michael? When someone hands you cash, don't you start listening to that person? Michael?
Well, I think it's definitely going to have a positive impact on how people view Obamacare. In fact, once all of this starts to kick in, I think the whole public perception around Obamacare is going to change very quickly. But that's not going to change the Republican efforts to villainize it.
Well, I read this thing that Rush Limbaugh says.
This is another Rush Limbaughism, but again, I think it's important to just keep pushing back against these people and call them out on their shenanigans. I think truth matters, and I think it will help because, you know, the nuance of politics and inside games and Washington, D.C. and all that is totally lost on the average American. But when they hear every single day of their life that a illegal Kenyan with a fake birth certificate has, you know, infiltrated the White House and has put in a Communist Slave Act for health care, you know, they get upset. And then you've got things like this Rush Limbaugh, you know, who's the number one spokesperson on the right side with his endless shows. He said Obamacare, now this is not just insulting in 15 ways, but just listen to this unbelievable statement. Obamacare is the law of the land, just like slavery was. So, you know, it's just they will say anything, but we've got to start countering their just extremity. I mean, it's so obscene what they do, and it's so perverse the way they twist actual policy and thought.
But again, when someone puts money in your hand, money talks and bullshit walks.
Oh, I understand that.
Hey, I tell you.
This is the thing. To get to the money thing, you have to get in office. He had to get in office.
Right.
And then he had to pass the law.
Right.
Okay. Well, we got one law passed. He did get in office. But then, again, it's only getting in there. And they've stopped him ever since. They've not only blocked everything in Congress, they've almost shut down the government repeatedly. They're doing everything they're possible to make his entire double presidency, not just one term, but almost devoid of anything. They haven't even yet, since the first day he went in, funded his rails and bridges and roads.
Well, yeah.
But here's the thing. If we don't counteract the lies up front, we can't get anybody elected, just like we saw here in North Carolina and everywhere else. And then we're back in the 1860s. And then when we do get back in power, because people are so completely in shock from being stepped on by the Republicans, then we have to build back up from 1860 to current day.
Here's why I did disagree with that, because I don't think people are that stupid. I think people, when money confronts them, people wake up and start paying attention. And I'm telling you right now, when people start getting this money in their pocket, those people, I'll bet you half of those people did not vote in 2010 who are going to be getting premiums. Half of those people didn't vote. It has to be, because we had the lowest voter turnout almost in history.
Yeah.
And you got to remember, Obama got health care in, and if that's the only thing he does before he gets out, remember, 50 years before him, they tried this and couldn't get it.
Oh, I understand.
And if he gets this done, he gets the Syrian thing cleaned up, and has a deal with Iran, he could say, kiss my butt. And as they say in Battlestar Galactica,
Fracken,
shut up.
Okay.
So that's where we're at. And it don't matter about anything else, because these people are proven to everybody that they lied. If you strip one thread out of the lie, right, the whole lie unravels. And Obamacare, which I love the name, is going to unravel what these people say. Because, hey, 22 million, this is one company. What do you think these other companies are doing? Blue Cross,
well,
Humira, all these companies have to give money back. I mean, that's going to wait. They're going to say, wait a minute. You ever seen the commercial? Michael, you ever seen the commercial with the guy and the girl sitting down, and she says, I thought you said the women drivers are bad drivers. And he says,
Right.
Yeah. Well, then why? Then the word comes in, why did I just receive this check in the mail for good driving?
Right.
And I receive it every time, every year, that I have good driving.
Right.
And then he says, well, he says, shut up. She says, shut up. That's what it's going to be like. Well, where did I get this premium from if Obamacare is no good?
I know, but I just want to call them out, and I want to take the attack to them. You know, that strong defense is
this is the attack to them.
But it's almost argument that if he provides the chicken in every pot that you're talking about, mythical,
but he can't,
then people are happy. That's backwards to me. I want to take the argument to them direct, because I'm tired of them getting away with the bullshit.
But
I'm tired
of
these people. They've got the worst functioning Congress ever. You've got them having, what was it, 9 days work out of a month?
Yep.
They've got things like 4-hour work days.
Yep.
Okay. That isn't even legitimate. Just call it what it is. Tell them to their face. Call them out on it. Make them change.
Well, what's going to happen?
Get away,
you know,
it.
That they just came up. If they, which they did already, pass this resolution, and they shut down the government, all the health care that the workers have that work for these guys will go away.
Well,
now, what do you think is going to happen then?
But they don't care. It doesn't matter.
Oh,
it will. The guys that are on, literally just the other day, the guy was whining that he got a $179,000 paycheck when his staff gets $500,000 by going out and lobbying on K Street.
Right.
Now, he was saying, I'm stuck here with the salary of that cat.
Well, that's why
Westing
left
it
to inherit
their world. They don't give a flying.
No, they don't. They don't.
They are sitting there trying to get that $500,000 golden teat so that they can just sit around and roll in their coins. Okay? This isn't reality. But we need to pull the curtain back and just make them a laughing stock.
Mm-hmm.
Who works 9 days out of a month and gets paid for it and is in any way legitimate? Just turn them out. I mean, literally, they recalled all those people in Colorado recently because they voted for Obama. Yes,
but that's
the first one in history.
Right.
They are doing it. Why can't we call them out? Why can't we say what is actually happening versus the lies they propagate?
Well, you know, Mr. Evans, and you're in a state that has 1.5 Republicans in the House. Is that true?
It's the vast majority of Democrats.
Oh, he's being polite.
No.
Yeah, out of 5,000, they got one Republican.
And
a half. And that's the dog.
And by the way, I'm
blind
jealous
dog.
Because y'all also have one of the best, most superstar, awesome dudes ever in Lieutenant Governor.
Oh,
I'm amazed.
Yeah, he's great. And,
so he's going to have a great future.
And
yeah.
Well,
yeah, Gavin
Newsom
is definitely a rising star. I think he's going to be presidential timber down the road. Certainly, he's the number one candidate to succeed Jerry Brown.
Right.
Jerry Brown,
an amazing individual. He thinks outside the box. You know, is probably the most engaging speaker I've ever seen, with the possible exception of John Edwards. And I know we're not supposed to say good things about John Edwards anymore, but
sure,
but he was an engaging speaker.
I was never fooled by him.
you know, but he was still a viable candidate before he
he looked good.
John Edwards reminded me of the guy. And what was the what was the guy? Was it Network where the guy was to pretend he didn't know anything? No, it wasn't Network. Where
Canada.
The guy? No, he was the guy that was on doing the nightly news. Didn't and he had the girl talking to his ear, telling him everything. And he didn't know.
Oh, broadcast news.
That was that person. But anyway, so tell us something about what's going on out there on the left coast.
Well, we're really concerned about turnout, election turnout. California, surprisingly, even to us, is 48th in the nation in turnout. And so we're really working on there was a big program in Los Angeles County last year to try and work on that, and we're running one in the Central Valley now. And what we want to do is, you know, there's a lot of groups out there that are very effective at registering voters, and then you get campaigns and the party to a lesser extent that really drive the GOTV or get out the vote effort right before an election. But nothing really happens in between, and that's when we should be reconnecting with and educating voters. And so that's what we want to accomplish. But we also want to try and determine why people don't vote. So we're putting a plan together where, you know, we're going to do focus groups. We're going to go out and try and find out, first, why people don't vote, and second, why people don't register to vote, and then see if we can develop a program to address those two particular concerns, while at the same time starting to educate voters on the issues that will be important come the 2014 election.
Well, you know why people don't get out to vote. To me, they're lazy. I mean, and realistically, they if they had to go pick up their paycheck, if it was a direct deposit, they would make sure that they picked up their paycheck every 2 weeks on Friday or Thursday or whenever they got it. Now, the voting doesn't cost us anything. There are places right now that are close by. It's not like out in Texas where you're going to have to drive 50 miles to go vote to register, then drive back 50 miles sometime later and vote. California should have plenty of places, plenty of precincts for people to vote. So,
it's a lot more complicated.
Yeah,
it's a lot more complicated, and I agree that there's probably a good percentage of people that are just lazy. It's not a priority for them. But getting to a polling place can be very difficult for someone who does not have a car, for someone who works one job or two jobs on election day, and who has to take a bus to the polling place, and maybe that bus doesn't actually go to the polling place. And we had an example in Fresno in the 2010 election where a month before the election, the registrar's office closed 50% of the polling site, or announced they were going to close 50% of the polling sites a month before Election Day. And they did it across the board. So they didn't take into account that if they closed two precincts in an area of town where people largely use mass transit, that was going to make it a whole lot more difficult for them to vote than closing two precincts where everybody drives a vehicle. So that's one issue. And the other is, you know, we see a lot of low turnout, particularly among low-income voters and particularly among Latino voters. And with Latino voters, you have a number of issues because, you know, they might view voting as making you know, the government aware that they're here. So even though they're legal and they're citizens, they still think there's the possibility of deportation. And or they might have come from someplace where you know, when you voted, somebody held a gun to your head, or voting didn't mean anything. And a lot of times you just have people who lack the education level to to put in the effort to educate themselves about the issues. So I don't think we can just say there's one thing that causes this, but when we go to solve the problem, we've got to look at all of these different items, and obviously we can't address all of them, but we've got to try and develop a program that will address as many of those issues as possible.
Well, you know, now, I agree with you. I'm not trying to say that they're all lazy. The thing is that, first of all, big cities should never have this problem because they have mass transit. This should only be a rural problem. But it's not. In big cities where you can walk to your precinct or take a bus outside your front door to your precinct, I don't care if you're working three jobs. That's bull. That's absolutely bull. They have no excuses in these big cities. No. New York and Chicago and L.A., they have no excuses. Fresno is not New York. They probably don't have buses running 24/7. And they definitely don't have buses running past every single precinct. So I can understand that.
But you know what? They need, and I've said for years, they just need to modernize the voting process. If we can have an ATM on every
corner,
and you can get money at every
what is the deal here, America?
Why can't you just log in to your freaking account at the government or whatever and vote your social security number or whatever?
I don't understand it.
You could vote from anywhere.
What? Now I don't know.
You can
did we talk about this one time a couple of years ago, Michael? That hey, if you're in freaking the mountains of Tibet somewhere, there's an ATM. You can get money out. How the hell can't you vote?
Right.
What is more precious to us than our money? Then you ask somebody, what's more important, your money in your pocket or voting? They'll say, money in my pocket. So if the money in your pocket is safe, why can't the vote be safe? The idea that because we can control the vote, we can control the money in your pocket?
Of course. That's why voting is so harshly suppressed everywhere. I mean, they do everything possible. That's why you still have places like Florida, laughingstock that it is, you know, literally doing the old punch ballots and things like that, paper, you know, because it confuses and limits and is subject to fraud and everything else possible, the vote.
Well, the thing is that they're suppressing these 30 governors, they across the board, and they're all 98% are in the South, suppressing the vote with voter ID, et cetera, et cetera. Then you got some out West. But this is not going to pass the Supreme Court. This is only fracking stuff that they're throwing against the wall because their teabaggers tell them to do it. This is not going to pass the Supreme Court test. None of these voting IDs and none of this. This will not surpass the Supreme Court.
Well, you say that, but look at who's on the Supreme Court.
I understand that. I understand it. But you got to remember, Justice Scalia was even against what went down the last time.
So you can't go back. I mean, look,
because it's law.
But here's the thing. Before we get to the Supreme Court and have to wait for them, you know, and wait.
Well, that will be before the
2016. You're counting on, you know, the Supreme Court stopping the Republicans at the last second. That's the last final straw. That they will maybe vote that corporations aren't people. Whoops, too late.
No.
But I'm just saying, you're waiting for an entity to do the final vote. Now, how about before we ever get there, we just don't have completely regressive, greedy tools in office creating these laws and messages to begin with?
It's too late because you didn't vote in 2010, so now you got them. Now you got to get them. You got them for seven years.
Let's just activate the voters and educate the voters and have some truth out there, and maybe we can have actual elections of actual people that actually do good policy.
We can educate. Educating people is, if you're going to rely on that, the only way, I believe, to hit them over the head is with money.
Money!
And when you start showing them a money in their hand check, from their greedy, grubbing insurance
what you're
companies.
Is the only hope for American voters is to buy them all off. Way to go.
Hey, it's been working so far. Are you kidding me? I mean, here's what Rush says about that. And he's talking about this right now.
Now, I'm going to make a wild guess that most of you don't want any of this replace business. What you want is let's repeal this and then start from scratch.
This is what he says. Now, this is like, okay, Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, was passed by both houses. That's including these Republicans and Democrats. It was judged in the Supreme Court, legally okayed by the Supreme Court. It is now the law of the land. I am saying, why don't they just say no one can vote? I mean, because if they can pass a law and have it go to the Supreme Court, it is now the law of the land. Why can't they change any law? Why can't they say no more Social Security? Social Security is a law, too. Why Obamacare? I mean, why stop there? Say, look, I want to get rid of Social Security. I want to get rid of Medicare. Well, I want to get rid of Obamacare.
Mike, if you haven't been paying attention, they've been talking about this for 20 years.
Yeah, but they haven't pushed a bill through.
Yeah,
they've never.
They been,
this is the only time they pushed through a bill.
Well, that's just because they hate Obama, and that's just a thing that they can do. But they have been for 20 years under – or 30 almost now, extreme assault on everything that they called the New Deal, everything that was FDR, which includes all of those things. And they've been hacking away at all of them. And the biggest, I thought, thing that they've done along the way was when they changed the law or did whatever and were able to steal the Social Security fund right out from under it. Because it used to be fully funded. Now there's an IOU in there so that they can say, it's going to go bankrupt.
Well, they did the same thing postal people.
Yes.
Yeah.
But this is the way they destroy institutions, and we're letting them. So your argument's invalid. It's already underway. All of the institutions are teetering. They're under threat, and we have to shore them up and save them. So they are repealing and destroying all of those things that they can.
Now, we have in this state, Mr. Evans, we have, since you left, we have Art Pope as our governor. I mean, McCrory is our governor, and he has. I was right. I just wanted to make it for those out, as Rush says, out on the real logo.
You have to mention the figurehead.
Yeah, the figurehead. So, which they all take orders from Rush Limbaugh. The thing is that none of this is going to pass the state Supreme Court. The stuff that McCrory has put through. In Texas, the Supreme Court of Texas has invalidated it. And the time that they get together to push it through the Supreme Court, which is costing the taxpayers money.
Yeah, but they don't care. They've voted 42 times
right
to defund.
Next week, I'm hope. Well, I won't be here next week, but I'm hoping to get our judge, who is with he's the managing director of the Advancement Project, on the show to tell us something about. I know they're involved with the suit here against Art Pope and his government, so along with the NAACP and a few others. But what do you feel we can do here, since you've come from the sunshine and into the dark valley of North Carolina now? Well, what do you think needs to be done here to get people to realize they are now under Darth Vader?
Well, certainly the rest of the country already knows that. I'd be surprised if people in North Carolina don't know it. But I think, you know, there's got to be some collaborative efforts to overturn this. And I think that's going to require, you know, the Democratic Party, pretty much every progressive group in the state, and even probably even talking with moderate Republicans, because I can't imagine that urban moderate Republicans are really on board with certainly the extreme parts of this effort. And you know, you just got to overturn it. I mean, it's got to become clear to them that if they proceed on this path, they have zero chance of getting reelected. And that's a message you can sell through the media.
Well, the thing is that when they passed this outrageous law today, last night, 4 million people are going to be losing their benefits. Right now, there are three people for every one job out there. 76% of households. Now, here's another thing which I didn't know. 76% of households getting food stamps or SNAP are children, seniors, and the disabled.
Right.
58% of households who get SNAP or food stamps are able to work and do work. And they don't make enough money to feed their family.
Well, they've already proven that if anybody has minimum wage in this country, even at full-time, 40-hour work week, you can't even survive.
That's right.
You can't even pay your
own
bills.
But here's something that I don't know why we don't hear this more of. Out of that 58% of households, 7% are the military.
Right.
Military. Our fighting men are on food stamps. Their families.
You answered your own question. I just begged you earlier. We need to start framing the argument and making these things front and center and call them out for it, because while they're saying they're the family values crowd and the true patriots, unlike those disgusting Democrats, they are throwing children, seniors, and
disabled.
And the disabled into the damn gutter.
Absolutely.
That has got to stop.
Call
what they are.
And
just be honest.
And the thing that's even worse is that 82% of these same households worked the previous year or worked after they received food stamps. One of the reporters, I think it's Brian Grimm on MSNBC, said that he grew up, he was on food stamps, his family. So, you know, to say that these people that are on food stamps are charlatans and need to be just thrown to the street because all they're trying to do is take our money is completely outrageous. It's completely outrageous. And this is what a group of Republicans said yesterday.
The reality is that American poor people are not malnourished. They, in fact, eat too much food.
When the safety net becomes a hammock.
My contention is that the Obama administration is encouraging parasites to come out and, you know, take as much as they can with no remorse. And this is how a country declines. This is how we become a weak nation.
30%. That's how many more Americans, according to a new study, are selling food stamps for cash illegally. No, Steve, that's not legal. Nearly 48 million people receive food stamps. The program costs $80 billion a year.
The government has reached into American neighborhoods and says it's okay to be dependent.
Shouldn't there be at least some stigma?
I mean, these people
be a stigma. There should be a stigma on people who lie to the American public.
Absolutely. So, and the only penalty we have right now is to throw them out of office. But in some places, you don't even have a Democratic candidate. They run them out. They have run them out. He said, the thing is that
They're cutting $40 billion, $4 million a year, over 10 years. I mean, $4 billion a year over 10 years.
Yeah,
and
not one corporate loophole.
No, they ain't cutting nothing for them because these people work. Those freeloaders, they don't work. I mean, this is, and they are cutting it out of the farm bill because they're giving these farmers who don't grow anything, they're paid not to grow. Now, how the hell can anybody, we have $47.76 million. I mean, I'm 47.76 million people who don't have enough money to feed their kids.
Right. So why can't we just have something like a living wage in America?
Well, Debbie Stabenow.
We wouldn't have to have so many people. You know what? Reduce the rolls by paying people a living wage.
Yes,
and
but the problem.
You wouldn't have any of the.
They said they got a living wage. They're spending money on. And last night, I couldn't get the number. I was listening on XM radio, and the guy says, well, because they were talking about how this is so horrible that they were cutting all this this money out of food stamps. And he called up. He said, well, listen. They need to cut that money because they're going to the bars and they're going to the liquor stores and they're spending money on food stamps. I mean, they're spending money on alcohol. That they're going and buying all this processed foods. Well, you can't do that. The computer at the checkout will not let you take food stamps at the liquor store. The store, Food Lion, Harrisita, all buy those. You cannot buy processed foods with food stamps. You have to buy fresh vegetables only. Meat. You can't buy these, which I love, the White Castle hamburgers, frozen. You can't do it because it's processed. So I don't understand. Well, and I'm going to ask, just like Thomas was saying, and you were saying, Mike, it needs to be put out stronger that this is not the case.
Yeah.
So, Michael, how do you get this out? You were saying before, how do you get, and it's not me, it's the person who hasn't voted because he doesn't see or she doesn't see how it's helped them in the last 10 years.
Yeah, well, I think the assumption we make is that people get their news from watching television or reading the newspaper. And most people don't do that.
Yes.
So people who are not getting their news that way have to be reached differently. And I don't have the answer to that. So I don't know how we reach them, but that's what we have to find out and that's what we have to address.
Well,
people who do access their news via television and newspapers, we need a concerted effort that the truth be told on those media outlets. Like right now, you know, everything we've discussed that's a lie or a misconception by something the Republicans have said, yes, you know that if you watch MSNBC. But you don't know that necessarily if you're watching CNN or the network news. So I think, I guess a Stop the Lies campaign would be in order vis-a-vis the mainstream media.
But that's wonderful. If they're watching Fox News, they're not going to see that.
Those people are lost. We're never going to turn their minds around.
Okay, well, that's a start. That's a start. If you know, hey, I can't do nothing with it. Well, didn't Mitt Romney say that? 47%?
I think we're a lot bigger than 47%.
Well, yes, that's what I said, but he did the same thing. He said, the 47%, they're never going to vote for me. And he was right.
Yeah.
They didn't vote for him. But there were some people who were in that room that didn't vote for him because he lost by 3%. I mean, you lost by what, 5-6%? So are we like the Republicans? And, you know, your friend, what's his name, Paul Weinrich, who, let me see if I can find, oh, Paul, where are you at? Paul Weinrich, who is the father of the Republican Party, who said that this.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
So with that in mind, how do we handle it as Democrats?
Well, I appreciate his candor. That's pretty rare in the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah, but that was done 12 years ago, 15 years ago.
Oh, really? Well,
yes.
And that's the direction they've been working toward, is to try and decrease the number of people that are voting.
That's correct.
You know, we've got to counter it. I mean, we have to let people know that your vote definitely makes a difference.
But don't people,
you know, how we
that?
Do it, I don't know, but we've got to figure it out.
Listen, but we don't have to do it. They do it for us. They're in office right now because we didn't vote. Now, isn't that an eye-opening experiment? Why do we have to do anything? Can't we just say, see, look what you got, because you didn't vote?
Well, once people start getting directly affected by the policies they're implementing, yeah, I think that's going to play out. But you're awfully optimistic. You sort of feel like this is going to happen overnight, and I don't think it is.
I don't think it's going to happen overnight, because it's another year before the primaries, and it's another 2 years before that. This regressive party has done nothing for jobs or to make anything better in this country. So why do you have to make up stuff? Just say, ask them two questions. Are you better off today than you were in 2005 or 2004? Do you have more money in your pocket since President Obama passed and signed into legislation healthcare? That's all.
Well, but let's assume that happens. Let's assume everybody wakes up and says, I understand what's going on. I have to vote now. Then you've got the additional problem of the roadblocks, you know, that they're telling you need a voter ID, and I don't know what kind of hoops you have to jump through to get that. And we've got the whole issue with, okay, students, like I think that was in the eastern part of the state that – they refuse to let some student vote or maybe even run for office. And
right.
still got all these suppressive tactics. So we can't just deal with one front. I mean, this is like World War II. You know, we've got fronts all over the place, and we've got
absolutely.
To deal with them.
Oh, no, you're absolutely correct. But I don't think
and that's one
of the it's
things.
A...
I'm saying the war is a good analogy here because one of the tool in war, and we saw this in World War II, is the disinformation. It confuses and paralyzes a society so that it's easier to, you know, take over.
Right.
And I think that's what we got to counter, because they are, you know, let's, you know, your favorite word, roverer.
Rover.
Let's look at the Karl Rove tactics of where he would. And this is brilliant, you know, straight from Goering and the rest of them. But they used language, and they used psychology on the population at large. And they were very successful at it, because in our country it became anathema to even use words like liberal.
Yeah.
They became that was like saying I love Stalin, you know, and you're like, it just became something, you can't ignore it, is my point. And I think you're absolutely right. It's like a war on every front, and we need to combat the disinformation, because the disinformation is killing us in the general public.
Well, I'm thinking just like these Progressive Party members are thinking, and this is the reason why they want to stop Obamacare. Remember, the guy who left the Senate, who is now the president of the Heritage Foundation, he said this will be Obama's Waterloo. Or, like Custer, it could be our Waterloo. Because I believe October 1st, when people start realizing, and the people who are going to start speaking are the people who are getting checks back in the mail for their Obamacare, when that starts happening all at once, it's going to be a snowball. And I think people out there, it's going to be very simple. What have they done for you? What have I done? What has the president done for you? I think this is we don't have to do any sort of getting in a classroom and sitting down and talking to them. Money talks and all the other stuff walks, because it's realistically in their hand. And I think once you just tap the person, hey, wake up, look what you have, and they'll say, you know, you're right. I think it is as simple as that. I don't think this is a major sell job that we have to do. They are selling, they are making this major sell job because they see this as a point of no return October 1st. They think that this is the coming over the falls. You're nearing the falls now. The only way to stop it is to have this ship turn quick enough to go to the side. But you know you can't stop a ship when a ship is moving down. A ship takes 5 miles to turn. So even if the Titanic saw those icebergs, they still might not have been able to stop it because they were going at full speed. So I just feel that is not a major overhaul that we have to do with the public. I think it's just tapping them on the shoulder and say, look, you see what happened when you didn't vote in 2010? Are you going to make that same mistake next time? And by the way, when you're on to the polls, cash that Obama check you got from your insurance company. I think it's as simple as that. Now, for the people, and there are people, because I always ask when I'm out walking around anywhere, and I ask people. I was in one of the new places they put in because of the convention down here. I was having some sushi with my grandson. We were going to a play, and I asked the waitress, did she vote? And she said, no, I just didn't get a chance. I said, what do you mean? Don't you know the issues that are out there that are going to hurt you? She says, no, I don't know anything. Did you know that you can now, do you have insurance here? She says, no, but I'm on my mother's. Oh, maybe that's why you don't need to know.
Mm-hmm.
She's on her mother's, I said, because you have Obamacare. She says, oh, I was wondering, because she said that I could come back on it. I said, how old are you? She was 23. So there are people out there like that who don't know. And all you have to do is say, hey, do you know why you're on your mother's insurance now? There are people, you just have to mention, just say a few words. There is no coaching. There's no getting them together in classrooms. You just have to tell everybody that you see, everybody that you run across, that you have a short conversation with, whether at the next pump at the gas station. Hey, guess what? I just got a check for my insurance company because of Obamacare. They're not going to know Affordable Care Act. They don't know that. Don't even bother with that. If they want to know why, then you say Affordable Care Act. This is what President Obama signed into office. That's now a constitutional amendment. End of story. I think we just have to mention it. I do not think this is a major sell job like the Regressive Party is doing.
Well,
now, Michael, I think that's what you can take back to California and see now, hey, well, you're at Fresno.
Everybody you meet, you're basically just going to say, checks in the mail, vote.
Hey! But no, first of all, you're going to say, do you have insurance? If you have insurance, checks in the mail. I mean, it's as simple as that. Now, the problem we have is just like you said in California, in Fresno, you know, how many precincts do they have in your county?
How many precincts?
Yeah.
Was that your question? Yeah, we've got about 700 countywide.
In your county, Fresno?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
But a precinct's defined very oddly here because a precinct is essentially anyone who has the same voting ballot. So some precincts might have as few as 10 people in them.
We call those neighborhoods.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Run that by me one more time.
So a precinct is essentially everybody. A precinct is everybody who has the same ballot. So because of districts overlapping or whatever, you know, there might be as few as 10 people that actually have the same ballot in a particular election.
When you say state ballot, what do you mean state ballot?
My school board, my city council, my irrigation district, you know, all of those I might not share with the people three blocks away from me, depending on how the districts are set up. And the other thing here is that, okay, there's 700 precincts, but that doesn't mean there's 700 polling sites. So there might be multiple precincts at a single polling site.
Well, that I understand, but I just don't get the thing about saying, so you mean if I have 14 houses on my block where I live, what does that mean?
No. You see, if you're in City Council District 1 and School
right.
Board District 3 and Irrigation
right.
17 and right. And State Senate District 35,
right.
The number of people that are in that same set of districts, depending on how each of them are separately designated, you know, might be as few as 10 or 15 that have exactly that same number of or in those exact same districts.
Is that because it's so spread out?
It's because that all these various entities don't communicate when they redistrict. So, and we vote for, we have a lot more entities on the ballot here. Like we vote for irrigation districts and parks and recreation
right.
districts and memorial districts, police districts, things like that. So none of them are communicating when they redistrict. So although I might be on the same block, or part of this, my block might be part of the same city council district, the people across the street might be in the same city council district but a different irrigation district.
So now each one of these districts,
what?
They have their own representative?
Yes.
So you mean one representative might only have 10 people?
No. But we're talking people that have exactly the same districts but exactly the same candidates on their ballot.
Okay, but what I'm saying is now, so a district representative.
You need to think of a big map, and
right.
on that big map, you're laying over it the city council districts. Then you're
right.
laying over it your equivalent of county commission districts. Then you're
right.
laying over it your irrigation districts. And then you're laying over that your state senate districts and your state assembly districts. And so as you match them up, there may be as few as 10 to 15 people that are in exactly the same set of districts.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So how do you get someone to represent you?
Their precincts aren't aligned to their districts, per se. You would be voting for
someone. Well, I understand. So you're just saying that someone who doesn't live in your neighborhood could go to your same precinct, could go to your precinct and vote. I understand that. How the heck does the district leader, how does he understand now what community on the map is his? That must be confusing as hell.
Well, for some of them it is, and particularly the less well-publicized bodies like irrigation districts and those types of things. I think a lot of people in those areas probably don't have a good feel for all the people in your district. And those are the ones that tend to have people that have been in them for 30 or 40 years, and they don't get very well publicized.
So it's almost like a Mayberry, the little Mayberries.
Yeah. You thought North Carolina had a computer system.
Yes.
Another issue, now that you got me on my soapbox here, another issue is, for example, for irrigation districts, for some of them, you have to actually be a landowner. So not anybody can run for the seat.
Oh, I saw this. That was Chinatown.
That's right.
Lordy.
So now you're saying to me,
hey, we don't want the whole
that on my block where I live, I could have a guy who's a district leader, the water leader, whoever that is, what do you call that thing about the water? What's that? The
irrigation districts. Mm-hmm.
The irrigation district, all on the same block, but they don't vote in the same precinct.
That could be the case, yes. It's not always the case, but it could be.
Yeah, but all you need is one time. It's true. So then, as the chair of the Fresno County Democratic Party.
What are you going to do to fix this?
How are you going to do to fix this? You need to straighten this stuff out. Say, look, this
we're addressing the types of issues that Thomas raised earlier. Like, we want to try and move as much as possible to some sort of computerized voting or internet voting. And once you've done that, that really precludes the need for the whole concept of precincts, because then you're giving people whatever the ballot is for their particular area, and whether you call that a precinct or not doesn't really matter. And so we'd like to move toward that, but oddly enough, we've actually gotten resistance from progressive groups because they feel as if once we move to computerized voting, it will be less secure. And so there's an insistence for maintaining a paper trail, which is a good idea, but they kind of don't want to move toward internet voting, and even some have complained about even the computerized counting systems.
Your good friend, and I know you're very good friends with Mr. McCrory, he said a couple of months ago, he says, we're not taking the vote away from you. He said, look, they got plenty of ways to vote here. You can vote on the internet. You can vote. I mean, this man thinks we vote on the internet right now in Mecklenburg County and across the state of North Carolina. I mean, has this man, well, Art Pope, I know, has brainwashed him, but the problem, no, he wasn't brainwashed. He wanted to go this direction anyway, so he went to the dark side. But what I'm saying is, if people are so afraid, then maybe they should vote at their bank. When you take out a deposit, you also vote.
Wow. How about this?
Same machine.
How about this? Simplify the whole thing. If you don't vote, or until you have to vote, whatever, everything's on hold.
Money?
You
paycheck.
Can't get anything until you finish the voting process.
Oh.
And then it unlocks your accounts and you're good.
Well, and that way it would assure Americans.
I think we should do it at the grocery store rather than the bank, because everybody goes to the grocery store. Not everybody uses the bank.
Yeah.
Well, they got ATMs at the grocery store.
That's true. Anywhere there's right.
That's right.
But, you know,
and you go any time of the day or night.
You want plastic? You need paper? You want cash back?
You want to vote. Right. And the little screen, you tap who you're voting for. Now, of course, there has to be an express line if you only want to vote for one person. The rest of it, right? So realistically.
I see people standing in line behind somebody and say, I'm sorry, you haven't chosen a judge yet. Oh, my God.
The thing is,
wait on this moron.
Well, the thing is, now, seriously, folks, stop calling me serious. Anyway, Shirley, yeah. Anyway, the thing is, are the people who are afraid of this, do they give the reason why they're afraid of it?
Yeah, because they think that the technology can be tampered with.
Well,
I agree. I think that's a valid concern, but I think that's a concern we need to address as we move toward
doing it,
toward making voter easier to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that can be set up from the beginning, and I think that they saw the problems that we had, and because the Bush years, they moved aggressively toward e-voting, but they did it, of course, so that they could control voters. That was that, you know, nice Karl Rove-ism. Hey, let's modernize the voting industry, and boy, we just happen to own the company that'll set them up for you, you know. But if we can get away from the Diebold model of tampered voting and go to just a legitimate, straightforward voting.
Just do it through. Diebold has the machine out there where I get my ATM.
Diebold was the ATM company nationwide, and they also happened to be, you know, fiercely Bushite, and they love to flip those switches for them. But we could easily set up a neutral, you know, universal system.
Microsoft.
And just
so it'll be a backdoor.
Now, just put it as, you know, like I said, just run it through the government or whatever and just make it a plain, flat, you know, neutral, non-owned. Because anytime you own something by a private entity, be it a person or company, you run the risk of it being compromised.
Yeah, but they blame Obama. He's going
to
take
it
over this.
It should be a public entity. You know,
I mean, what do you think about that, Michael? Public entity?
It's a public entity.
Yeah, no, I think it's an excellent idea. And you could incorporate in that. Maybe a printout of what your vote was, so that if there's a question about it, you can bring it back and say, you know, this machine said I voted like A, but you can see this is how I actually voted.
Well, yeah, but see, how many people would do that, would question it once it went through?
Like, for example, remember a few years ago we had that situation in the eastern part of North Carolina where I think like 3,500 people's votes ended up not counting in a precinct because the machine somehow erased them. I forget what the details were. Now, if everybody had a printout of what their vote was, then – you know, you could start having those people come back in, and I think they did contact most of the people at that time to let them know that their vote hadn't counted. So that's just one possibility. But it's a check. And, you know, when we move to any kind of a system, we want to make sure that it's as foolproof as possible. And you have to do that both technologically. But if you do something like providing, a paper backup, that also gives the voter extra security that their vote is actually counting.
Okay, but you can have a paper backup and then they tamper it on the other side. How would you know in a close election that your vote wasn't counted or tampered with?
Well, you probably wouldn't know it directly.
I mean, you know.
Here's the thing.
Yeah, I guess you wouldn't know about your specific vote, but you could certainly identify trends. like the county in Ohio where they had more votes that counted than people actually voted. I mean, clearly, you know, an instance like that should draw national attention.
Or where
you lose 3,500 votes as we did in the eastern part of the state. Or if 70% of precincts voters are Democrats, but 90% of the votes go to a Republican candidate. I mean, any type of red flag like that should, cause you to have to go back and reevaluate what happened. And presumably, you've got some sort of a backup.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. Like in when Bush won Florida, we're talking about 253 votes. How the heck could you find that out? If they
Bush didn't win Florida. But, let's be clear about this.
The Supreme Court
gave Bush to Florida.
Right. Okay, right. Well, he said he was ahead by X amount of votes.
No, they're just
how would you tell?
Well, Mike, they just like everything else in the government, they have a general accounting office. You just pass the GAO with, you just set up a nationwide database, and every time there's a vote, they would simply do, a count to make sure that there was no discrepancies and stuff later. And if you find it, you retally it, you redo it, or you investigate why there's discrepancies here or there or whatever. You know, it would just be like anything else that runs, anything. You have to have accountability, and they would just have to neutrally verify the system all the time to make sure it's accurate.
Well, we're talking about an impeachment event if Obamacare goes through. Listen, this is what Glenn Beck said. Glenn Beck said, about a year ago.
To impeachment, I personally think there's a lot of people on both sides of the aisle that shouldn't be impeached, should go to jail.
Is the president one of those people?
Yeah. It is time to appoint a special counsel to explore impeachment of this president. I
and
called
then he
today
said
for the very first time in my career on this president. I have said before, if that's impeachable, I personally am calling to impeach the president of the United States.
Now, he says he never said it before, but we heard two events where he did say it within the last 2 years.
Okay.
So, Obamacare is an impeachable offense.
Well, Obamacare was passed by Congress.
I
don't really see how that could be impeachable.
He says it's a impeachable offense. He said the Syrian debacle is a impeachable offense. The recess appointment is an impeachable offense.
Everything's impeachable.
Gay marriage is an impeachable offense.
You didn't mention it. He's lying.
Obamacare is an impeachable offense. And the birth certificate is an impeachable offense. Now, I ask you, Ms. Evans, if this man is a born Kenyan communist sympathizer.
Not sympathizer, terrorist. Get it right, Mike.
And terrorist. And he's sitting in the Oval Office. He is not the president of the United States. How can we impeach him?
Well, that's a good question.
And if he's never the president,
right? And you mentioned a couple of things there. Okay, you say that for his handling of Syria and for the recess appointments. Well,
yes.
Then if you're going to take that argument, then I certainly think you should have impeached George W. Bush for the handling of Iraq, which we know involved direct lies to the American public. And he also did recess appointments. I mean, I think that's been a trend among presidents. So, once again, it's just their partisanship coming through. And, I can't imagine And just off the top of my head, I cannot think of a legitimate impeachable offense that they could possibly come up with.
Well, impeaching means that is the only way to get rid of a federal judge, the president of the United States, the vice president, a member of Congress. But it has to be something against the United States of America. That means if we can impeach him over Obamacare, that means every Republican who voted for it has to also be impeached. Because aren't they part of the crime? Isn't the getaway driver still as guilty as the person who robbed the bank?
Right.
I mean, so this the whole thing is we need to impeach every member of Congress that voted for it. Every member, that means House and Senate. We need to impeach the vice president. We need to impeach the Speaker of the House. We need to impeach the president. And we need to impeach all the judges in the Supreme Court that voted for it. We need to impeach all the people at the appellate court that voted for it. We wouldn't have a government. So this is
I'm not sure you want to repeat this, because I think you'll probably see a bill in the House next week that strives to do exactly that.
Well, I mean, hey, didn't you just hear Rush Limbaugh said we need to start from scratch?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what he said? Let's throw the whole thing out and start from scratch. This is what they're trying to do. So I just think that we need to make sure that whatever we do, we get to the point where we have backup. With Obamacare, they want to get rid of it, but they don't want to replace it with anything. They just want to get rid of it. Now, all these people, the healthcare industry, they don't care one way or the other.
Well, they do. They'd rather have none so that they can.
No.
Raising prices.
But they have. Well, yes, that's one end. But right now, they have more people who are coming to the system.
People, but they also have all that stuff like pre-existing doesn't exist anymore and all that. And that annoys them because it interferes with profits.
Of course,
Like womanhood was pre-existing condition.
It was
denied people.
I didn't think about that. Yeah. Well, Mr. Evans, I want to thank you for being with us. You have graced us with your magnificent. Why don't you run for North Carolina governor? Because we're going to need one in a couple of years. Because this guy ain't going to be here. Yeah. By accident, he got in only by a couple of 100,000 votes.
There are
100,000 people who wish they didn't do that.
He's shown his true stripes, and he won't last.
Well, it's not him. Yeah, it's Art Pope. As long as Art Pope is gone, and the hanging of the sword of Damocles of Duke Power is not there, we'll have a government.
Your dark, coal-stained hands.
Right.
That's so, the governorship from your family.
So, all right. So right now, before you leave, tell us, Michael, what is going on the immediacy in Fresno?
Well, we just had completed a very successful effort where we turned back a privatization effort by our Republican mayor. And through a citizen initiative, we were able to defeat that and send her back to the drawing board. We're hoping to build on that for the 2014 elections. We've got a House seat that with a fairly sizable Democratic majority that is currently held by a Republican, and we feel like we can win that back. So that's going to be our focus. And then we've got a few local races. But 2014 is going to be really crucial for us, and we feel like with the party building that we've been doing and with the voter education strategy that we're going to put in place, that we can really start to make a difference.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what, Mike, we need some of your Fresnoic genius over here in Charlotte. if you can help us build and educate our base here, that would be fantastic.
Well, what do you say, Mike? That's why you're here, right?
Well, you know, you got to have sustenance.
Hey,
all right.
Now, during our primary here for our mayor, we had almost 16% turnout. So that is substantial. No. What are you talking about?
Hey, that's true. That's true. that is true. We almost had 16% turnout. That's true.
That's
that,
true.
That's plenty of sustenance. All right, Michael.
Thank you very much.
I want you to be on top of things out there and make sure that we don't get a major difference out there, because we need to have the lieutenant governor in as the new governor of
California.
And
future president of the United States.
That's right.
Hey, the campaign launched here today.
That's right. Very good.
You weren't paying attention.
All right. I'll let him know that.
Thank you.
All right. That was Michael.
Sounds
Evans.
Good. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. And that's Michael Evans out there. Well, I know, but
you
see, that's the theme song that I had for Michael that I could play at the time.
Well,
but I would change it since my Dodgers won. Hey, what can I tell you?
Let's see if
we have a call that I have to get to right now. Tamika, you hold on. We're going to get to you. Matt Newton, how are you?
Yes, sir. Michael, I'm great. It's wonderful being back on the show.
So, I was ranting and raving a little while ago about, well, fill us up to date now about the shooting of the young man, 24, 25, I believe, 26, by the police officer. What's going on?
Yeah, and I apologize. I missed any discussion earlier, but
I was ranting when I first came on about this.
Yep. at this point, the officer fired 12 shots. I think that everyone knows that 10 connected. These supposedly or seemingly were in three bursts, three separate bursts of gunfire, and he is now facing voluntary manslaughter charges. We have received the 911 audio tape. However, the family, as well as their attorney, Mr. Chestnut, are the only ones who have actually reviewed any police cruiser dash camera footage. And that's something that civil rights groups are calling for the release of. And we also, the district attorney, has referred this to the attorney general's office, which I commend him for. An outside oversight agency, and so there have been a lot of calls as well to reconsider the voluntary manslaughter charge.
When you normally go into these things, you know, we're going to try a second-degree murder, first-degree murder, you normally have a plea bargain. I mean, plea bargain down from this is like involuntary stealing a Snickers bar from a grocery store.
I mean, yeah, it would appear that... Absolutely. It appears as though we've started from the basement here on this one, with the lesser charge being charged. However, I have full confidence and faith in the Attorney General Roy Cooper to make the right decision. So we'll have to wait on that.
General, so say that again. Attorney General is now going to be investigating this?
Yes. The District Attorney, Andrew Murray, has referred this case. He has claimed a conflict of interest, but he has referred the case to the Attorney General's office, and they will be the ones prosecuting it.
Okay, so does that mean the FBI is now in for North Carolina FBI?
No. The investigation is still, for the time being, is still being conducted by the police department. However, they're conducting it in conjunction with the Attorney General's office.
Okay. Yeah, well, the other day in the newspaper article by the police chief here, who I have a lot of respect for, he also goes to my church, Police Chief Rodney Moore, And he told the Observer editorial board that it didn't matter whether the policeman, I won't say his name, it didn't matter whether the young man Farrell complied with officers' commands or had his hands up. It was clear that Farrell was unarmed, Monroe said, and the police decision to shoot was unlawful. He said, sometimes we have to put up our hands and use our nightsticks and other things, and sometimes just retreat to handle the situation. So, if the police chief, who this police officer works for, is saying this, there has to be some sort of reasonable assumption that this whole thing got completely out of hand. He said, even though the football player, the young man Farrell, might have been physically larger than all the policemen there, it does not justify shooting him, Monroe said. We have women on the force who are outweighed every day. That doesn't give them the right to use deadly force.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't.
And that's not what they're trained to do either. You know, in those circumstances, there's what's called the continuum of force. And you don't start from the standpoint of deadly force and then move your way back.
Well, that's right.
It would appear, yeah.
And then the other thing here, I don't think it should have much difference, but I'm going to say it anyway. The officer is a formal is the former animal control officer who was the one with the least experience of the three at the scene.
And it does raise questions regarding training. You know, we have seen, and this is an interesting point to touch on, is the fact that we have seen the training budget for our police department as well as the community service budget for our police department in Charlotte slashed over the past 3 years. And I've made this point numerous times that on the flip side, the overall budget for the police department has actually increased over the past 4 years by $20 million. So certainly it's an issue of priorities too. And what's important, under the circumstances, we've seen a death that is reminiscent of the deaths that we saw in 96 and 97 that led to the institution of a Citizens Review Board. And I think that under the circumstances, I have the full faith and confidence in our Attorney General to make the right decision. But at the same time, we have an opportunity to reflect and actually think about reforming our current Citizens Review Board as well.
Since you brought it up, Citizens Review Board, how do you have a Citizens Review Board when a Citizens Review Board doesn't have subpoena power? What you have then is a joke. Because if they can't subpoena the facts as they are, not saying they would be changed, not saying they would be slanted, why have a Citizens Review Board at all? Since they
you're sandbagging them.
If they're going to be a rubber stamp.
That's right. And at the very least, because, you know, we've heard a lot of talk, and you know my opinion, Michael, regarding subpoena power and whether or not we need to have state approval of that. But at the very least, we have members of the Citizens Review Board that not only have to undergo Citizens Academy training, but they also have to file confidentiality agreements. At the very least, there needs to be written full disclosure to these members. If they would like to see the entire internal affairs file so that they can make a fully informed and fully educated decision, then I feel as though that's something that is beneficial.
and it's something that we should encourage, and it's something that, that we should allow. Hopefully, you know, Monday we're going to have a I'll be in attendance at the council manager meeting where city council members will be listening to the final recommendations of the task force. And hopefully, especially in light of this current tragedy, we can find some common ground. And despite any reservations to say subpoena power, at least still give the board the opportunity to make those fully informed and fully educated decisions.
Well, see, here's the problem we've got right away. If it's in Roy Cooper's hands, you don't have a citizen review board. Because if you had a citizen's review board, it wouldn't have to go to the attorney general.
That's right.
I mean,
that's right.
Completely
ludicrous. Yeah.
They are admitting you don't have a citizen review board.
Or,
because it's out of your hands.
That,
you people
go home,
because you people do not count. We don't need to listen to you. We're going to go to the attorney general. We don't need you guys here. That's completely ludicrous.
I think it's the special circumstances with this particular case that has taken it to the Attorney General's office. In 99.99999% of cases, the Attorney General's office or the State Bureau of Investigation doesn't get involved. And
absolutely.
What you see is you see that outside of our own governmental agencies, outside of the police department, and in a limited respect, the district attorney's office, there isn't a system of appellate or review outside of that for a citizen, and therein lies the problem. And I think to really make matters worse is that we're talking about a system that doesn't allow that, and then on the flip side, undercuts the perception of there being a good police department. And it really soils the reputation of the police department as a result.
Absolutely correct.
And that's what
absolutely
we're trying to avoid with the Citizens Review Board.
Absolutely correct. And you see, the thing is, now, the Attorney General, the FBI doesn't work for the Attorney General, they work for the governor, is that correct?
Now, they work in conjunction, yes, they work for the state, but they work closely in conjunction with the Attorney General whenever they do work. The way of looking at this, you know, that this has been a matter that is a city matter without SBI coming in, and it's going to remain a city matter outside of just the simple prosecution by the state. Normally, though, what will happen is the FBI is involved with the State Attorney General's office because they're the ones who hand over, just like the police department in Charlotte hands over their investigations to the district attorney's office here.
Right.
The FBI hands over their investigation to the Attorney General's office. It's just, well, we're kind of having this a little bit of there's a difference or a wrinkle in this case because The investigation isn't being conducted by the FBI, but by the police here.
Didn't we talk about this the other day? I said it's got to get out of the district attorney's hand, and he's got to send it up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Attorney General, you got to go to the U.S. Attorney General. Didn't we, I just say this a couple of days ago, I think.
I think you were right. you were ahead of the curve on that one, Michael.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing is that what they're actually saying here, if you had a citizen review board, this would not be happening. You would not be happening. Period.
I think the case can be made that there might have been an opportunity to have a bad apple like Officer Carrick weeded out prior to this ever occurring. And that's the idea. It's an idea of reverberation throughout the chain of command down to the officer who's on patrol, and ensuring that they are sticking to their training, not overreaching, not abusing their power, and certainly having this level of accountability all the way down to the very bottom rung. and certainly a Citizens Review Board, that's one of its not just goals, but it's a byproduct of what it does.
Mm-hmm. Well, Matt, what? So anything else that we need to know to keep us up to date?
Sure. There is going to be a meeting on Monday at 11:45 in room 280 of the Government Center. And we're hoping that we have a good turnout of people to convince our city council members, just like we have been trying to do for 8 months, but to convince them that this is a serious issue, and especially in light of the current circumstances and in light of the current tragedy, that it's something that needs to be expedited, something that I feel like we can all come together, reach some common consensus amongst the entire city for the better good of the entire city.
Well, so to me, it looks like it took to convince the city council that something was wrong. It took the death of this young man, Jonathan Farrell.
You know,
is that what we're saying?
I was afraid that reform that something like this might happen, and I think that ultimately over the past 15 months, shooting deaths by police officers aren't an isolated incident. But let's face it, in the case of Mr. Farrell, we had a young man who was 24 years old, had a bright future, no criminal history, was just the utter height of tragedy. And there is, you know, no excuse. And I'm happy and I applaud the police department for taking swift action. I applaud the district attorney's office for sending this to the attorney general. And we'll see. I think that in the interest of full disclosure, it would be interesting to see the videotape, and we'll see what the attorney general does with the charge. But aside from that, yeah, I certainly think that a case can be made, and we were afraid that something like this might happen, but a case can be made that a Citizens Review Board can go a long ways towards preventing anything like this from happening.
Right.
Well, not to be cynical, but half the time in government, the only time something gets done is when a tragedy occurs and forces it to be done. Just like, you know, every other tragedy with Rodney King or anything else, there are years and years and years worth of complaints. And nothing happens because, hey, status quo. And then when a tragedy forces change, that's when change comes often. But, you know.
Okay, Matthew, I want to thank you. And I'll give you a call tomorrow sometime or later tonight. I've got some other things to talk about. And just keep us up to date. What's going on?
One final comment. I hope that this can help bring the entire city together. We're talking citizens, government, the police department. Allow us, and in your immortal words, Michael, allow us to move beyond being Mayberry, become the city that we've always meant to be, have a national class, world-class Citizens Review Board like we see in New York, in Los Angeles, Chicago, Philadelphia. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you so much for having me on again, you guys.
All right. No problem. Thank you. And thank you again. Talk to you later. Bye. And that was our lawyer who is here,
Matt Newton.
And he is on the case here with the shooting of Jonathan Farrell. And I always just want to remind everybody, which I forgot to do.
Hey, by the way,
that, yes?
You need to whip up your magical machine there that can find all great classic.
Oh, I will do that.
And find some Perry Mason music.
I got Perry on
there.
I got Perry.
His own theme song.
Right.
It's starting to become a favorite of mine.
I want everybody to remember who's in the Charlotte area, lives in, matter of fact, who live near, well, you know, if you drive, it's all right. R&D, used tire and auto repair. Speak to Ty or Screwdriver, his sister. And I they were part of the team that was working on my deck, and I have, hey, big deck out there now, right?
Yeah, double the size of that.
Woo,
nice.
Big deck. And we are going to have a, and, you know, I could not find a song. The song for this young lady. I could not find her. I did find her song, but, you know, this is what I think we need to say.
Out of the tree, if I just pick me a plum, you came along and everything started to hum. Still, it's a real good bet, the best is yet to come.
Yes, I'm saying the best is yet to come, and we have Tamika on the phone with us.
How you doing, Mr. Lawson? How are you?
Doing fine.
That might be Lady Tamika.
Lady Tamika is on the phone with us. I'm sorry,
yes,
I got you, but we were backed up. We were backed up. That's why I didn't get to you when I said I was, but. So, hey, tell everybody about Lady Tamika.
Lady Tamika is a mommypreneur, an author, a spiritual power coach, and the host of her own show on WGIV, The Be Experience with Lady Tamika.
And when are you on?
I'm on Monday, every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. on 103.3 FM.
Now, mommypreneur, what the heck is a mommypreneur?
Oh, man, my friend Carly just coined this new term, mommypreneur. It's women who are mothers, and they are entrepreneurs. So we put mommy together with preneur and made it mommypreneur. So I'm a mommypreneur.
How many mommies, how many children do you have?
A whole bunch over here. I have a whole starting five over here. I have my fabulous five over here.
Got a fabulous five? Holy cow.
Yes.
How many girls, how many boys?
I have two young men. One is my elder. He is 18. And I have a younger one who's 7.
I saw him the other day. Wasn't he there? When I saw you?
Yes, my two boys were with me. Yeah, they were with me. Yes.
Okay. Yep. Now,
I know it's unbelievable, Lawson. You can't believe that I have I have
no
children, but it's possible.
No, ever in this life. Tell us the powers that be. A journey becoming one's true authentic. What does that mean?
Oh, wow. So, that's the title from my book, which is Can This Relationship Survive? The Power of Be, by L.T. Dixon, which is me. And the book actually is a journey of me becoming who I am. And, you know, in every moment, we're always becoming a greater or a better version of who we are. And sometimes we forget in the journey when life is happening to us that what is happening to us is actually not who we are. It's just a part of the experience. And if you keep on living long enough, you know, you actually become who you are. So I'm so proud that out of all the pain that I've gone through in life, it became a passion for purpose. And every mess that was in my life, I turned it around and made it into a message to empower and inspire other people to be who they are from the inside out.
Well, whenever that happens to me, I have another great goose with cranberry juice. But, so, you know. A little expensive to use that way.
Awesome.
But you don't look like you've had any problems. You don't look like you've had any problems to me.
Oh, man. I'm glad I don't look like all that I've been through. God is
right?
Really amazing. God does so many great things. And so I'm also glad that I don't even carry it. So the book is actually an expression of me releasing myself from that. I started off talking about writing. It started off as letters, and I wrote a letter to my biological father, who actually he didn't participate at all. He participated in the act, but he didn't agree to actually be a father to me. But God right. sent another lovely couple who I have two sets of parents. I wrote a letter to my biological father just thanking him for actually agreeing to bring me here and that I wasn't upset with him for not being a part of the journey. And I didn't miss not ever having a dad because my dad stepped in. So I actually have a set of parents who live in California. My dad is amazing. He has done a great job with me becoming the young lady that I am.
Absolutely. Great. And?
And? What?
Yes. And a great job
who's the and?
With you. And right. what are you going to, what are you trying to do on your radio show?
Oh, well, my radio show is actually a combination of spirituality, relationship, and health. And so I tie all three of those together because part of you actually living out who you are, first of all, you have to first identify that you are a spiritual being. And so spirituality is a core of who I am. So I don't get away from that because every time I try to, God shows up within me and just do some magical thing with me coaching individuals. So spirituality is the core of the show. Then the relationship part, I am really so involved in relationships and how the best relationship that you can ever have is the relationship with yourself as well as with your God. So from a universal perspective, I don't try to push any religion on anyone, but I do try to bring diversity in the spiritual aspect so that all religion can be recognized and respected on my show. And then the health part really stems from the position of it is God's will that we would prosper and be in good health, even as our soul prospers. So as much as I grow mentally, I know that it is so key that I stay in shape and that I eat well and that I forgive others so that I can be better in who I am.
Well, yeah, you say here that you get to be who you are so you can be everything else.
Absolutely. Yes, that is the closing thing for the B experience. And when you know who you be, you really wouldn't want to be anyone else. And so God did not make us to be cloned or to be a copy of anyone. We are all authentic. We are all originals, and that's what we need to start living out, the original. You know, leaders really lead because they march to the beat of their own drum. And when people really realize that you have your own beat, you have your own goals and your own desires, live those out. You know, I'm full of me. You know, I really don't have time to be full of anybody else but myself. And so I spend some time with myself to make sure that I am being my best, not only to others, because you are, you know, you attract who you are, and that which you give out, you actually get back. So I try to make sure that I'm always giving out something good, positive, so that I can have good and positive come back to me.
Now, how do you do that with five?
Well, my
children.
That is the
how do I
right?
do that with five? It's
yeah.
easy.
Give us that. The whole world is listening. How you do that with five children?
I'll tell you, very simple. This is it. This is the key right here.
Yes.
I'm always
okay.
number one. I am always number one. The reason why I say
right.
that is because I can only be as good to them as I am as good to myself. And so a lot of parents lose themselves in a relationship. And I remember I had a conversation with a young man who was questioning my parenting style. He was like, "You seem like you're having so much fun. I'll never hear anything about the children, this, that, and the other." And I said, "Are you questioning what position the children play in my life?" And he said, "Yeah, I want to know. You know, I gave up my life for my children." I said, "That was your problem. That's not mine. When I agreed to have them, I didn't agree to give up my life. I agreed to share my life with them." And so they really don't interrupt or stop anything. If you really organize your life and structure it and have some consistency going on and put it together as a teamwork, you can make things happen. But the key to me ever, even, you know, even now that I'm here in Charlotte, I've been here 4 years, and the key to me being in this state with no family, you know, bloodline family, was that I had to create a village. You know, I believe in that. It takes a village to raise children. So I'm not here alone. I actually have a large village, a community of folks who really help me out. Like, say, for instance, my son played flag football for the YMCA. His coach actually goes and picks him up from school, which is right near the Y, and then I meet them after practice to go and get him. So I'm number one. To be honest, I take care of myself very well. I don't neglect myself because I don't neglect them. When I'm with them, I give them what they really need from me. And all of them don't need the same thing, so I don't, you know, try to stress myself over, you know, overdoing it. But I realized just the other day, I think it was, I was having a conversation with my 18-year-old, and we got to the point that I was saying to him, you know what, I had to free myself of something. I had to free myself of thinking that I needed to prove that I was a good mom to any of them. And sometimes as parents, we want to we want our children's approval. I don't need their approval, because every day that I get up at 5:30 to make sure that everybody get what they need to get to in the morning, I know that I'm doing the best that I can. And that's the only thing I can do is give them the best. But I have to take care of me first in order to give them the best.
Well, you know, and I am 1,000,000,000% agreement with what you just said. But there are a lot of people. There are a lot of people whose life revolves around what their child, let alone five children, do. I mean, they will give up every single thing that they have for the child. So now, what does the child think growing up?
The child,
they never see, they never see sacrifice, because this is normal to them.
Yes.
I mean, oh, so, you know, so what? Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're always doing that. You know, they're always doing that.
Oh, we lost her. Jamaica, you need to call back.
It's the
one of the children, huh?
Five children. I was going to say earlier.
No! Jamaica, call back.
Entrepreneur is what a good term. Because
I like that. No, I like the name.
And that's something that you can see a real leader. I mean, you want somebody to help you and to guide you and
right.
lead you who is already able to juggle five kids. Are you
hey,
kidding me?
Give me a break.
Give me that kind of experience any day of the week.
Absolutely.
You know you got something.
But you know,
on the ball there.
Hey, we got people who can't audition, who can't handle a kitty cat in the house, let alone five kids. Give me a break here. He lost you. You're back.
I'm back.
Hello. Okay, gotcha.
I'm here.
Yeah, well, I hear you. We lost you for a minute, but I was just talking to Thomas about that. Hey, I know some people that can't. Their life revolves around their cat.
Mm-hmm.
No, I can't stand cats.
We're talking
them.
About yeah. me and my.
Oh, God, please. I'm a dog man myself. But anyway, the thing is now, there is. I had a big dog. I think I showed the picture to Benji. But anyway, I had this big dog. 120-pound Doberman Pinscher. He was my best friend. And he just died. I feel like it's yesterday, but it's like 5 years now. But this dog was so much a friend with me. I mean, more than my kids. That whenever I would leave town for more than a day, he would not eat unless he heard my voice on the phone. Then he would
Wow.
eat. He would cry, walk around and mope. He didn't cry. He didn't want to go out. He wouldn't do nothing. He'd sit and look at this fake phone I have in the kitchen. Well, it used to be hooked up. I disconnected. I like it. It's one of those old-fashioned phone wall phones. But anyway, they'd hold the phone to his ear, and I'd say, his name was Fox Mulder. I said, Mulder, I will be home soon. You need to eat. And he would eat. Now, you know, but he would do. It wasn't one of these, I don't want to do that. I mean, so it's different when you have kids that have their own mind, that got their own mind because evidently the parents didn't teach them what their mind should be functioning like when they're part of a group. Everything isn't just them, 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 them. And there are some kids that are me, 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 me. I mean, we have kids like that in the government, in the Republican Party. So the thing is that what do you do? What do you suggest to parents? I mean, parents can call you up on the phone in your, when you're on WGBI on Monday between 1 and 2, and they can ask you a question like that. What do I do with my six-year-old who stomps his feet and doesn't want to eat his carrots?
There's a lot of things that you can do. You know, I don't have
like
that kind of
edge. With, beating them with the belt.
You know, and you know, the interesting thing is that I don't hit my children. They don't get whippings. They don't get spankings. I think.
Well, you're 18-year-old tall too, or as tall as he's taller than you. Ain't
yeah,
he?
My 18-year-old is taller than me.
Yeah.
And
right.
I just have to look at him a certain way. I didn't know what that look, you know, that was like. But the thing is that one of the things that my dad taught me was that, and he never hit me.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things he taught me was that communication was really key. And if you're clear in your communication, you can really get your child's attention. One thing I think parents have lost with their children is eye-to-eye contact. They don't look at the children.
Well, yeah, because they're watching the computer game. That's why they don't have eye-to-eye contact.
Absolutely. So how do they talk at the children, not to them. So
yes.
When I'm having a conversation with my children, I talk to them face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to them face-to-face, and we have a clear conversation. I'll give you a prime example. Yesterday, I was out with my children. We went into a store. They wanted some candy or something like that. It was four of them. It wasn't our five. It was four of them. And one of my daughters wanted something different than everyone else.
How old are they?
She's 12.
Okay.
18, 14, 12, 9, and 7.
Oh.
And so the four older ones were with me. And so we're in the store. She wanted a specific thing. But my 14-year-old, which is daughter, my girl's in the middle, told the 12-year-old, no, mommy's already paying for it. You can't get it. So by the time we got to the car, she's upset. She's very upset. Now she's crying. So I turn around, and I'm driving, trying to drive. And so I turn around, and I notice that she's crying. I'm like, why are you crying? She's like, well, I didn't want this. And I said, well, why did you get it? She said, because my oldest daughter told her that she can get it. I said, okay, so who was paying for it? She said, you were paying for it. I said, so why did you listen to her? She said, but I thought that I couldn't get it. So I said to her, I said, let's do this. First of all, if you want to be upset, I don't want you beating up on yourself. You know what I'm saying? Don't be upset. This is a part of the learning process. Don't go to somebody that don't have what you want and ask them to do it for you when you know that she wasn't paying for it. Why would you ask her to do that? Why would you even listen to her? She didn't have the money to pay for it. I did. You know, I said, so the key here is that you asked the wrong person. So you
mm-hmm.
upset now and crying that everybody else got what they want, but you didn't get what you want. Who's number one? And I teach my kids the same principle. Who's number one? She said, I am. I said, soon start acting like you're number one. You don't let number two tell you what to do when you're number one. Coach the main person. So after a ride in a while, I said, you know, if you want that candy bar, I can stop and get it because that's not a problem. By the time we finished talking, I asked, I said, do you want the candy bar? She said, no, I'm okay. Tears were dried up, everything. But it was strictly, you know, the conversation that I was having with her. I wanted her to see that this was part of a learning experience. That when you
mm-hmm.
want something, first thing you have to do is ask. But you have to ask the right person. Don't listen to the person that cannot get it for you. Ask the right person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure when you ask for what you want, you will get what you want. And don't take no for an answer if you're really determined about it. So, you know, it's those kind of conversations that I learned, that I get from them. But more importantly than anything, Mr. Lawson, is that even though I'm the mom, I'm also the child too. I don't just, it's not a one-way street in parenting.
You learn from them.
They get to teach me some things. You know,
absolutely.
Children are wise. Man, my 7-year-old will show you some things that as we are as adults, we don't believe it's possible. He will tell you what is possible and tell you how it's going to happen, and you can guarantee that it's going to happen because he's determined. You know, he's not messed up with the, you know, with no, you can't have. I don't, you know, when they come to me and they ask me for certain things, you know, back in the day, our parents used to say, stop asking me. I even hear parents in the street, stop asking for this. Stop doing this and the other. Why are you taking away their ability to use the tool that was given to them? They're supposed to ask. So I tell them, you know, if it's something that I can't do right this moment, I say not right now. I really don't tell them no unless it's really the answer is just a no answer, but it's not right now. And it doesn't mean that it can't happen later, but it's not right now. But you will be surprised. Let me let you in on a little secret. You will be surprised at the way that I parent them, being as though I grew up in foster care and I was an abused child. So I had to undo all the things that was done to me that was very hurtful. So which meant that I needed to create a new blueprint for how I parent my children. Being in houses where people just wanted the money and did not care about you really messes you up in your adulthood if you're not constantly working on yourself. And so I made a commitment that when I had them, that part of my parenting was going to be totally different than what I was parented. And so what that meant for me was that I had to create something new. And it didn't come from my mom or anyone because they didn't parent. My mom didn't parent me because I was in foster care. So that's what I mean when I say I took some of the mess in my life and made it into a message. That came from the mess that I'm able to talk to them like that.
Well, you know, that's very funny. My mother, I think, was the smartest person still to this point that I ever have ever known. And we had TV before everybody had. We had TV when I was growing up. None of the kids in my class had TV. Kids used to come over to watch my house on Fridays to watch cartoons. And I remember one time I was looking at Captain Video or somebody on TV, and they were giving out a secret message, but you had to get the decoder ring to decipher the message. So I said, "Oh, I want that." So it was in a cereal box, shredded wheat. My mother said, "You don't like shredded wheat." I said, "Well, I know, but I want this box." He said, "Dennis likes shredded wheat. He's my younger brother." I said, "Yes, but you want this shredded wheat. We just got some here, but you want this other shredded wheat because it has a decoder ring in it. Now, if I get this, you are going to eat the shredded wheat." I said, "Okay, no problem. I need that decoder ring." I got it, and I want to tell you, shredded wheat tastes like daggone straw to me. I couldn't pay if you put all the sugar and milk on it. I ate it. I couldn't stand it. I got that decoder ring. When I deciphered the message, it said that Captain Video has landed without problems. And I said, "Are you kidding me?" I'm 6 years old, I think. I ate that shredded wheat, that box of shredded wheat, and my mother said, "Well, do you like it?" I said, "No." So she said, "What did you learn?" I said, "I'll never ask for any more shredded wheat again." To get the decoder ring.
So your magical decoder ring
had to eat.
Turn to the straw in your hand.
That shredded wheat. I ate that whole box, and Dennis had his box. And he said, "Oh, I love this." He said, "You want to eat some of mine?" My mother said, "No, you have to eat that shredded wheat."
And to this day,
learn my lesson. I have not had.
You haven't had shredded wheat since.
That's
then.
Right. And remember, don't ask for something that you are going to change your mind about later.
Wow.
Right.
You're saying that shredded wheat tastes like dead dreams?
Yes. Yeah, and that's the best that it tastes like. Yeah, I still have that foul taste in my mouth right now, every time I even think about it. But you're right.
Such a sad.
But you're right. Shredded wheat. See, I'm even saying it. You're right.
Nightmares tonight
about shredded wheat coming to get me. But anyway, you're right. When I used to teach school, I taught 9.5 years at Northwest School of the Arts here in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I told the kids, when I came in there, and they were from 7 to 15 years of age, because I taught a new class there, media literacy. I created a television studio with teaching in television and radio and whatnot. And the thing is that I told them, we are here, you together. You are here to get some information that I'm going to pass on to you, but I am here also to get information from you. Because there's a lot of things that you know that I do not know. And because I'm the teacher that does not give me the gift to know all that ends all. And you're absolutely correct. As parents, parents do not give their kids enough credit for teaching them.
Yes.
They don't.
Absolutely. You know, you know, Mr. Lawson, I say that, you know, that we say that our children are at risk. It really is our parents. I don't think the children are at risk. Our children are smart. They just need some structure and some consistency. You know,
that's
the parents are not providing them with what they need. And so they think that they buy them all these different things that they really need, and it's not what they need. They need some structure and some consistency. More importantly, they need some love. They need to know that they matter. They need to know that they're important. And, you know, that they're not a liability to us, but they're an asset. And so I appreciate all five of my children. You know, they're my greatest asset. And so
absolutely,
it's just up to me to invest in them and make sure that I give them what they need, a little of what they want, but more importantly, what they need from me. And so I love them all differently. And I know that sounds strange, but I have to even tell my mom,
right.
I love them more differently.
Yes, yeah, you have to love more, because all the kids, they're not the same. Even if they're sisters and brothers, they learn differently, they understand differently,
well,
they have
unique
feelings that are differently, because they're all unique. Every one of us is unique. We need to go, and I want to have you back on the show next Friday.
Awesome.
I'd like to have you.
That works for me.
Guest. I like to have you as a regular guest.
You'll be our mommypreneur.
Mommypreneur. That's what you'll be. You'll be a mommypreneur.
Right.
And,
awesome.
I want to have next Friday, 5:30.
Okay.
Is that good for you?
I'm back with you. That's good for me. Okay. I'll be back with you next Friday at 5:30.
Okay.
Awesome.
Next Friday, I am gone next Friday. I'll be in Hilton Head.
Okay.
That's the Friday after, but I'll call you. I'll let you know.
I know
okay?
you will.
All right.
I'll make sure I have some music for you.
Well, you listen to this. I like this by Quincy Jones. We're going out, so just stay on, and I'll turn it up. But everybody, have a great weekend. Thomas?
Thank you.
Thomas has got 15 kids.
Yeah. You know what? It feels like 15 kids.
You
know,
okay.
I know the most important thing is video games. That's all they want.
You see?
Latest, greatest video games.
Yeah, you need to talk to him when we get back. My producer.
Okay.
Like, all right. I'm out of here.
Cheers.
Everybody have a good weekend. All
you
right,
too,
Tamika. I'm playing this for you. Killer Joe.
Okay.